Good morning to everybody who is on the platform and those who are watching us at home. Welcome, Deputy Minister and DJ and your team. We will now hand over to the Deputy Minister to lead the delegation from the Department of Justice and Correctional Services on their 2021-2022 annual performance plans and their budget. Over to you, DM.
Thanks very much, Chair. Good morning to everybody, to all members of the committee. Chair, just maybe the NDPP, as you probably heard, started saying something and then got frozen. So I don't think she's gone off the platform, but maybe when she comes back, she can say what she wanted to say, because she seemed to be wanting to say something up front as a preliminary issue. But look, this is for the department to present the annual performance plan and the strategic plan. So I'll be handing over to the DG. I see there is the NDPP. Through you, Chair, I don't know if we can ask her what she wanted to say before I start, in case it's something preliminary to this meeting.
Okay, and you, NDPP?
No, thank you, Chair. We're still trying to get our data connection because we are slipping in and out of this. But apart from that, I'm in your hands, Chair.
Okay. Should the department finish earlier, since you are around, we can start connecting you immediately. Even if it's before 2, if they finish on time. I think she's frozen again.
Yeah. Anyway, Chair, thanks very much. I'd be handing it over to the DG, Advocate Doc Mashabane. Just to say that he started his term on the 1st of March, which was sort of right at the time when the APP and strategic plan had to be finalized. So, and obviously needed to make an input. So, to some extent, there was a bit of a rush this time, and there may be some issues in the APP and strategic plan that are that need to be relooked at. But let me hand over through you, Chair, to the DG and to ask him to introduce the delegation from the department and then to start with the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Over to you, DG.
Chairperson, good morning. We have an echo here.
I'm sorry, DJ. You might have connected, as you've indicated, you might have a number of gadgets in the same room. So can the other gadgets switch off their volume?
Yes, it has been switched off. We're trying to have as many gadgets as possible to avoid any possible cut. But I was saying thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services and Honorable Members of the Committee. We're grateful to the Deputy Minister who's here providing us political support and guidance. It is a great honor for me to be given this opportunity to address this August committee on the performance plan of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development for the year 2021-2022. As the DM has already indicated, I assumed duty as the 6th Director General of the Department post-1994 on the 1st of March 2021, and I'm grateful to the Executive of the Republic, the Minister, the Deputy Minister, for the confidence on me and the appointment as the administrative head of the department. I'm honored to lead a team of experienced, skilled, and highly talented senior management. And I'm grateful to the directors, acting directors general, who held the fort before my appointment, in particular, Advocate J.B. Skosana and Kale Pillay, who led the administrative arm of the department during a challenging time in our nation's history due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The senior management of the department went on the retreat in October 2020 after a meeting with the portfolio committee to develop a turnaround plan in order to improve the performance of the department. After my appointment, we organized a strategic planning session in order to refine the strategic plan and the APP of the department. We emerged from the 2.5 days of the strategic planning session with a clear, bold and ambitious strategy and APP. We are convinced that the plan we have devised in the form of an APP 2021-2022 captures all the elements of a turnaround plan that will improve the performance of the department and place it on a trajectory to an outstanding performance. Our performance in the first 6 months of 2020-2021 was in the low 50s, but in the last 6 months, ending 31st of March, the performance increased to above 60%. This clearly demonstrated that the unabated regression and downward spiral has been halted. We are grateful to the guidance and the chastisement we received from this committee. We are convinced that the department is turning the corner and should be out of the woods by the end of the first 6 months of the performance cycle. Since my appointment, I've met with all the senior managers, middle management, and lower management of the department, who are all committed to the endeavors to turn around the department. Through these engagements, I've come face to face with the great challenges facing the department, but they are not insurmountable. With the support of the minister, the deputy minister, and indeed the entire senior management of the department, we will continue with our endeavors to make sure that the department becomes one of the best performing departments in government. Chair, our annual performance plan that we are presenting to this committee today comes at the backdrop of the celebration and the observation of the 25th anniversary since the adoption of our constitution. As Honorable Chair and Honorable Members are aware, tomorrow, the 8th of May, marks exactly 25 years since our world-renowned constitution was adopted by the Constitutional Assembly. In this respect, as the senior management of the department, we have agreed amongst ourselves that the 25th anniversary will serve as an inspiration for us and as a department to try and reclaim the center stage as a very critical and important department in the micromanagement of the entire state. Part of what we have done in the APP, our APP is not just a normal APP, but it encompasses all the elements and hallmarks of an attempt to turn around the department. We have emerged from the strategic planning session with 10 bold and clearly identified strategic outcomes, which my colleague, the head of the strategy of the department, will present to you. Out of those, we have devised in the main focus on the two new strategic outcomes, one being the modernization of the department. Though previously it was in the APP, but this time it has been elevated and clearly captured to make sure that our focus is on the modernization of the justice services. So we have committed ourselves to the modernization of all the justice services across the different strategic outcomes. The second outcome that we have devised, which is prominently reflected as well, is public education around the constitution and all the services of the department. And all of that then makes the 10 strategic outcomes of the department. And as you will see, these 10 strategic outcomes, on top amongst them, is the modernization and increasing access to justice services. So we are committed to modernizing the services of the department. And the second of the 10 is our commitment to building and deepening constitutionalism, respect for human rights and the rule of law. And third, the review of all the colonial and apartheid era legislation with the aim of aligning all these legislations with the constitution. And fourth, which is public education, the implementation of the National Action Plan, to combat racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia, and related intolerances in order to advance respect for human rights and the rule of law. And we'll also part amongst those is the addressing of the scourge of the GBV and femicide. Most importantly, again, is the transformation of the state legal services with the rapid implementation of the State Attorney's Amendment Act of 2014, which later my colleague, the Solicitor General, will speak to some of the developments in that respect. But we are also committed to the transformation of the legal profession, which is an important work that the department does through the state legal services. We have also committed in the APP to build a capable, professional, and ethical organization. So those are some of the salient points that you will see throughout our APP. There are a few steps that we have committed to take, Chairperson, in the first 3 months of the performance year, which is the first quarter. One is the finalization of the review of the macro structure of the department, which had not been reviewed in the more than 5 years as required by the DPSA. We have committed to finalize that so that we can immediately move into placement of senior managers. Key to that as well is our commitment to stabilize senior management by filling the key strategic positions. We have given ourselves clear deadlines that by the end of June, we must be done with the process of filling of the key strategic vacancies, as this portfolio committee had identified in its previous meeting with the department that the destabilization of senior management had a direct impact on the performance of the department. Over and above that, we have taken into account the need to build our human resource. And in this regard, we have developed a strategy which will be implemented as well to reposition the Justice College to ensure that we build the much required skills for the cadership that must lead the Department of Justice. We will be conducting a skills audit to identify the gaps and the interventions that will be required to improve our performance. But over and above that as well, we have committed ourselves for the first 3 months to conduct a culture and climate survey in the department to get a sense of what do the employees of this department think about the department and all the challenges that they may be facing with respect to performance of the department. So with those few words, Chair, I would like to invite my colleague, Terence Rastroke, who is the head of our strategy, to take us through this APP, in particular the 10 strategic outcomes. Chair, you will note that we have developed 77 indicators for the 10 strategic outcomes. I know that from the previous year, the indicators were slightly more than that. We have not dropped anything from last year. What we have done, we have realigned in cases where one indicator was unnecessarily broken into five using the SMART principles. We have tried to integrate them into a crisp and concise indicators. So therefore, we didn't lose anything from last year, but we are continuing to build from last year with an improved and SMART-driven APP. Chair, with your permission, I have the honor to invite Mr. Rastroke to take this portfolio committee through the APP of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. I thank you.
Thank you very much. May Mr. Rastroke proceed.
Chair, if I may, my apologies for interrupting, but we seem to be getting a message that the NPA should be here at 2 p.m. We're not sure. We may have missed you if that was indeed the case. If you could please advise what the position is, Chair, we'd appreciate that.
Okay. The time was set for 2 p.m. But I said that since you are around, if we finish earlier, it would not hurt if we can just start with yourselves.
All right. Thank you, Chair. So we'll be on standby.
Yes, so that because you are part of the Justice Department in a way, so it would not hurt you to listen so that you understand where they come from. But immediately, if we are done with them, then we will just invite you, provided sure. Everybody is around. But if he's not around, then we will speak to the two people.
Thank you, Chair. We'll at least make sure that some of our people are online and will advise us accordingly. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think we have been able to give Justice a cover as they are struggling to connect. So we're busy with something else. Mr. Soroka? DJ?
Yes, Chair, can you hear me, Mr. Soroka?
He's not connected.
Yes, I'll give you my question.
Honorable Chairperson, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, yes. I'm proceeding. I was saying, Honorable Chairperson and members of the committee, and the presentation is focused on number of parts, but for the purpose of this engagement, I will straight go to part C, which is measuring performance. And as I was saying, that DG in his introduction has actually captured our strategic focus for the current financial year. So if we go to slide number, that is part C of the slide, in terms of the performance or measuring performance, the outcome that the DG was talking about, that we have committed to modernize and digitize our services as Justice Department. The intention here, Chairperson, is to increase access to our services, which is a priority that Minister has actually been talking about since his deployment to the department. The second issue is to roll out the solutions for those services on our internet platform, as well as ensuring that our services are provided online so that we increase the quality of our services. So we have committed to achieve this outcome through a number of indicators. The first one being maintenance services available on the department's portal by the 30th of December. Also the trust services that must be available on our portal by the 30th, as well as disease estate services available on the departmental portal by the 30th of September 2021. And in terms of the issues around accessibility via our digital channels, we are saying that in this current financial year, Chairperson, the protection order services must be available on our internet portal by the 31st of March, 2022. Expungement of criminal record services must be available or accessible via digital platforms by the 31st of March of this current financial year. The NRSO integration with SAPS for NRSO removal application will be available by the 31st of March, 2022. We are also saying that 45 sites will be rolled out with the court audio visual solutions, and 400 sites where cashless court solutions through point of sale device will be deployed. In terms of the outcome number two, the purpose of this outcome, Chairperson, is to ensure that we improve our organizational capabilities as well as good governance. So we have identified that we need to improve the department's audit outcomes. So we have identified interventions that will assist us to achieve this outcome. And we have also identified about three indicators that will assist us to achieve this outcome. Also, we have identified the skills gap as one of the critical areas that we need to focus on so that we can be able to build capacity within the department. Now, in terms of this, we have put together a number of indicators around making sure that we transform our organizational capacity. One, Chairperson, we are planning to ensure that 10% of the vacant positions at SMS level is maintained. and 50% of women occupying senior management positions is achieved. Six initiatives to complete and implement reconfigured macrostructure is what we agreed upon in terms of the current financial year. And we are also intending to train 3,000 officials in line with the work skills, workplace skills plan through our Justice College and our HRD unit. In terms of issues of corruption cases, we are saying that 70% of the reported corruption cases must be investigated for officials, and they have to be finalized in the current financial year. And 60% of disciplinary hearing must be finalized within 90 days. 60% of grievances must be resolved within 90 days. And 45 disciplinary hearings for misconduct backlog cases must be finalized in the current financial year. In terms of number of grievance backlog resolved within 90 days, we have identified 50 of them that must be dealt with, and 50% of significant findings must be resolved in the current financial year. 70% of fruitless and wasteful expenditure must be reduced. 55% of irregular expenditure also must be reduced in the current financial year. In terms of the undisputed and valid invoices paid within 30 days from the date of receipt, we are saying this financial year we need 100% of those to be processed. And we're also saying, Chairperson, that 40% of the percentage of the rent value of discretionary procurement allocated to exempted micro enterprises and qualifying SMEs, SQEs, will be allocated 40% of that, as well as 10% of the rent value of discretionary procurement allocated to women. In terms of the funding model for the implementation of NEP, we are planning to ensure that the executive authority approves by the 31st of March 2022 the funding model. And we are also planning that 85% of expungements must be finalized within 3 months since receipt of complete application. In terms of the outcome number 3, Chairperson, this is a new outcome that we've put in place, and it's actually focusing on the implementation of the departmental communication strategy. It focuses majority on awareness campaigns and indicators that will be monitored under our communications unit. And these indicators are the following. In the current financial year, we are saying that we will have to ensure that we conduct 145 public education activities on the 25th anniversary of the Constitution and constitutional rights education. And we're also planning that 200 of public education activities must be conducted on justice services, meaning criminal, civil, family law services. And we're also planning that 4 trafficking in persons awareness campaigns will be conducted in the current financial year. In terms of the number of sustained and visible anti-xenophobia campaigns conducted in collaboration with other departments and role players, we're targeting 6 of them in the current financial year. And we're also targeting that 9 awareness sessions on LGBTIQ rights be conducted in the current financial year. We're also planning, Chairperson, that we need to develop a report on the implementation of the programs to celebrate the 25 years anniversary of the Constitution that must be submitted to the Minister for approval in the current financial year. So that is, in essence, what is predominantly activities and indicators that will assist us to achieve Program 1 of our strategic and annual performance plan. Now, program 2, Chairperson, that is court services. The purpose of this program 2 in terms of outcome 4 is to ensure that we increase access to justice. And for us to increase this access to justice, we have identified key areas that we need to focus on. The first one, Chairperson, is the fight against gender-based violence. So as a department, we'll implement interventions that will address the scourge of GBVF, against women and children, and will also play a role in implementation of the 2019 Presidential Summit Declaration on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide and its National Strategic Plan. So for us to do this, we've identified a number of indicators. First being that in the current financial year, we'll have a phase four functional femicide watch dashboard with available data that must be finalized. And we also want to decrease the percentage of criminal cases that are postponed due to unavailability of court administration to less than 0.3%. In terms of the child justice preliminary inquiries that must be finalized within 90 days after the date of first appearance, we're targeting 90% of that, and 65% of the NRSO clearance certificate issues within 10 days. We're also saying that we want to ensure that number of additional courts that are designated in terms of Section 55, capital letter A, of the Criminal Law, Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act 2007 of sexual offences. We are targeting to ensure that we make sure that we designate 100 of those courts in the current financial year. We are also, Chairperson, targeting that 75% of courts compliant with the strategy on universal access for persons with disabilities, as well as 80% of family advocate litigation matters that must be finalized within 12 months from the date of opening the matter, and 80% of family advocate non-litigation matters that must be finalized within 6 months from the date of opening the matter. We're also targeting, Chairperson, 80% of maintenance matters that must be finalized within 90 days from the date of proper service process, as well as ensuring that we have a social compact discussion document that must be submitted to Cabinet by the end of December 2021. We're also targeting, Chairperson, that six branch courts must be converted into full court services, as well as the case backlog reduction framework must be adopted by 31st of March 2022. In terms of maintenance, we are saying that maintenance improvement framework submitted to the minister for approval by the 31st of March, 2022. Now, this program also, Chairperson, is supporting outcome number 10, which is the outcome that is focusing on crime and corruption that must be reduced through effective prosecution. So the fight against crime and corruption, Chairperson, will continue to be on the departmental radar over the midterm period. Now, in enhancing the fight against corruption, we as a department has an indicator that deals with the establishment of the specialized commercial crimes court. So we have identified targets. To establish two specialized commercial crime courts during this current financial year, and we will also develop a position paper on the review of the existing anti-corruption legislation and institutional arrangements. Now, Chairperson, in terms of our targets for the current financial year that supports this outcome, as I said, we have identified two dedicated specialized commercial courts to be established in the five provinces, as well as ensuring that the position paper that must be signed by submitted to the minister by the end of the financial year. Now, in terms of the program three, which is our state legal services, this program is actually supporting outcome number five. And part of outcome number five is improving master's services. And the indicators under this outcome are improving and transforming the master's services. So we've identified number of indicators that talks to this. The first one, Chairperson, is that by this current financial year, we want to achieve 75% of liquidation and distribution accounts in large estates that are more than 250,000. That must be examined within 15 days from receipt of all required documents. We're also targeting 75% of letters of appointment issued in deceased estates within 15 days from receipt of all required documents. And we're also targeting 80% of beneficiaries in receipt of services within 40 days from the receipt of all required documents that is in or under Guardian's fund. Chairperson, you were also saying that 75% of certificates of appointments must be issued in all bankruptcy matters within 10 days from receipt of all required documents, and also 75% of liquidation and distribution accounts in bankruptcy matters that must be examined within 15 days from receipt of all required documents. And lastly, Chairperson, the 70% that we want to achieve of letters of authority that must be issued in trust within 14 days from receipt of all required documents. Or the last one is 75% of letters of appointment issued in curatorship estates within 15 days from receipt of all required documents. Now, the next outcome, Chairperson, is outcome number 6, which is the colonial stroke apartheid era justice-related legislative reviewed and replaced, that is the legislation. So we are saying, Chairperson, that the review and the replacement of the colonial and apartheid era justice-related legislation is one of our priority for this strategic plan cycle. So this apartheid and colonial justice-related legislation will be reviewed and replaced with the aim of aligning them with the Constitution of the Republic. So the measure of this outcome is to have less than 2% of legislative instruments that is developed that fail to withstand constitutional court challenges. And only pieces of legislation that are not in sync with this constitution must be reviewed and replaced. So to show commitment to this, Chairperson, we've included in our APP an indicator that deals with number of apartheid and colonial era justice related legislation that is submitted to the Minister for repeal and replacement. But also over the MTF period, we have about 12 justice related apartheid and colonial era pieces of legislation that will be considered for repeal or replacement. For example, the Trespass Act, the Righteous Assemblies Act, and the Prevention of Public Violence and Intimidation Act. Now, in terms of the actual APP and time frames, we are saying that we want to ensure that 4 bills and regulations must be submitted to the Minister for approval in the current financial year, and also 4 colonial apartheid era justice related legislation must be approved by the Minister for submission to Cabinet. We're also planning and targeting 30% of rule of court submitted to the board and approval, as well as 12 research papers that must be submitted to the Commission for approval. Now, in terms of our outcome number 7, that is the transformed legal state services, we are saying as a department, Chairperson, that the transformation of the state legal services is prioritized through the implementation of the State Attorney's Amendment Act 2014, Act Number 13 of 2014. Now, the focus on this one is the finalization of policies that will culminate in lowering of costs of litigation and the building of capacity, as well as establishing well-run state attorney's offices. So during this current financial year, Chairperson, we are planning to ensure that 3 policies will be developed and submitted to Cabinet in September in the current financial year, while the 2 remaining policies will be completed and submitted to Cabinet for endorsement before the end of the financial year. So at a strategic level, we are planning to achieve 5% annual reduction in state legal liabilities. So other indicators that are aimed into achieving this are going to be the following, Chairperson. We are saying that in the current financial year, we will have 2 briefing and outsourcing of legal work, initiating, defending, and opposing of matters. Also, we're saying that we'll have to ensure that we develop policy on the management of state litigation contingent liabilities and submit that to the Minister for approval. We're also saying, Chairperson, 50% of litigation cases must be settled in the current financial year. 70% of legal opinions that must be finalized within 30 days from the date of receipt of the instruction, as well as 70% of suggested bills and subordinate legislation must be finalized within 30 days from the date of receipt of the instruction. In terms of the outcome 8, Chairperson, that is the outcome that is aimed at transforming the legal profession. So we are saying that the transformation of the legal profession is our priority for this strategic planning cycle. And at a strategic level, Chair, we are saying that we want to achieve 10% of the annual increase of previously disadvantaged individuals, legal practitioners, conferred as senior counsel, as well as increasing the number of previously disadvantaged practitioners that are briefed by 5% on an annual basis. So we have identified specific indicators that talks to this. The first one is that we are targeting in the current financial year 82% of value of briefs that must be allocated to the PDI legal practitioners, 29% of value of briefs that must be allocated to the female legal practitioners, and 41% of briefs allocated to female legal practitioners. In terms of issues around the policy guidelines, we are saying that in the current financial year, Honorable Chairperson, that we'll develop a policy guideline on the conferral of the senior counsel status, and that must be submitted to the President by 31st of March 2022, as well as the policy framework that must be submitted to the Minister for his consideration by 31st of March 2022. Now, the second last outcome, Honorable Chairperson, is on the advancement of constitutionalism, human rights, and the rule of law. We, as a department, we held our strategic planning session, as the Deputy Minister has outlined in his opening remarks about the session that we had on the 13th to the 15th of March after the appointment of the DG. We themed our strategic planning session celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Constitution to advance constitutionalism, human rights, and the rule of law. And this was the beginning, Chairperson, of putting that advancement of the constitutionalism and human rights of the law on the radar of the department. So given the scourge of racism, xenophobia, and general intolerances in the country, the effective implementation of NEP will in turn contribute towards building a more equal and just society, with a particular focus on vulnerable, marginalized, and other priority groups, thus advancing constitutionalism, human rights, and the rule of law. We have identified three indicators, Chairperson, that talks to this aspect. The first one is that we want to, Honorable Chairperson, ensure that we develop a rapid response mechanism, and that must be established by the 31st of March of the current financial year. Also, we are planning to ensure that there are data sets that we identify for the development of the virtual repository by the end of the financial year. And we are also planning to have one country report submitted to DICO for onward submission to treaty bodies. And 80% of valid requests for extradition and mutual legal assistance in criminal matters processed and submitted to the Director General within 20 days from the date of receipt, as well as the framework on extradition and mutual legal assistance submitted to the Minister for approval by the end of December 2021. We're also planning, Chairperson, to draft a framework on treaty obligations and submit it to Minister for consultation and approval. Also, we are planning to develop a draft framework to monitor the implementation of the Constitutional Court judgments. That must be submitted to the Minister for consultation and approval. Now, the last program, Honorable Chairperson, is a program that deals with auxiliary services, which predominantly deals with the integrated justice system program. And in this program, it is actually supporting the outcome number one that I spoke to about earlier, that deals with modernization and digitizing the justice system. So we are saying, Honorable Chairperson, that by the end of this MTF period, the IJS program governance structure would have been approved and implemented. And in addition, Honorable Chairperson, the plan is to increase the number of departments and entities from 9 to 11 that are connected to the transversal hub and are able to exchange information amongst themselves. So for us to achieve this, Honorable Chairperson, we have identified indicators that will assist us to achieve this outcome. The first one is to ensure that by the end of the financial year, we have four IJS governance framework structures that are approved by the 31st of March. And we're also planning that in the current financial year, we want to connect one government department, that is the remaining one, because the previous eight were done in the previous financial year. that must be connected to a transversal platform and exchange information electronically. Also, Honorable Chairperson, we're planning to ensure that the 7 of the IJS DPMA assessment report recommendation is implemented. I will hand over, Honorable Chairperson, to my colleague who will just speak to the issues around the risk. Thank you.
Chairperson, with your permission, I will introduce Mr. Venile Mahlangu, who is the Chief Risk Officer of the Department, to take us through the apex risk of the Department and the mitigating factors that are being implemented. Mr. Mahlangu, you have the floor, sir. Mr. Mahlangu, if you could please unmute yourself.
Can someone call me? Hello, thank you, DG. I am here. Can you hear me?
We can indeed. Please proceed.
Okay, yes, DG. Thanks, Chairperson. Come again?
Can you see your picture?
Yes. Yeah, I'm sorry, I had a network problem in the house, and we don't have electricity in the house. So I decided to come in, connect from the car, because the view or the network is clear here. So in line with outcomes that has already been indicated, the department has identified 10 risks that are in line or talking to the outcomes of the department. One is aging and unstable ICT infrastructure resulting in disruption of systems. Here, as a department, we are talking modernization. Now, the modernization revolves around ICT. The ICT is the sector for the modernization to be realized. So, until such time, our ICT is in good state, we're going to have difficulties. So we have identified that as a risk, which we have a plan in place to go in as far as making the situation better so that modernization can be realized. Second one, poor contract management leading to irregular expenditure. In most of the time, the department was found in a position whereby contracts come to expire, and whereas the new process of coming up with a new contract have not started, resulting into extension of the contracts and then coming to the irregular expenditure. So we have made put mitigation plans in place to ensure that at least 6 months or more before any contract expires in the department, the process of renewing the contract is kickstarted. Three, non-compliance with departmental supply chain management policies and procedures in relation to procuring of legal services. Number four, inadequate management of people. The corporate services, through corporate services, the department is going to come up with or is going to put in place, implement the plan that is there in terms of HR plan, the HR development plan. Number six, Chairperson, Number five is a compromised physical and information security. We also have a plan that we have put in place as a department to better the space. Number six, delays in delivering infrastructure projects. We also have got a challenge because we've got a dependency element here. We work in partnership with the DPW. We are not 100% in control of all the projects that we need to deliver in the department. However, we are doing our best and our putting measures in place as a department to ensure that our part in this space is attended to. Number seven, inadequate disclosure processes of contingency liabilities in state attorneys. I think if the Solicitor General can be given some space in this sitting, we'll talk more about the issues around the contingency and state attorneys' liabilities. Number eight, inability to implement COVID-19 risk adjusted plan for the effect management of COVID-19 resurgence. The department has got a just committee that manage this process. We are now have identified the teams as a department to deploy in the regions to all our service points to ensure that for the looming COVID-19 coming, the third wave coming, our service points are close to be 100% compliant with the controls in line with COVID-19. The last one, Chairperson, is the vacancy in key positions in the department. I think earlier on in his opening remarks, the DG touched on the issue. So it's one of our risks. However, through corporate services, HR component, the department has moved some steps in line to attend to the key positions areas in terms of recruitment. We are at a satisfactory level in the DG has indicated in this first quarter, we should at least move to a situation or a level whereby this will be a less of a concern for us as a department. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, colleagues.
Thank you.
Chairperson, with your permission again, I would like to invite the acting chief financial officer to take us through the budget resources of the department. And is represented by Mr. Johan Johnson.
Okay.
Mr. Johan Johnson, if you can hear us, please.
So, Chair, there is another JJ in the department.
There is a
Johan Johnson. Good morning, colleagues, honorable members. This is Johan Johnson speaking. I'm the Chief Director of Finance. I'm assisting the Chief Financial Officer on the budget presentation. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, we can.
I'll first see if I can quickly just zoom in the presentation. Honourable members, you might have received two presentations, but basically the format is the same. I would just want to highlight to you and some major features of our budget presentation. When we planned and started planning for this new medium term, we had a particular budget as a baseline, and then we were confronted with further budget cuts, and those budget cuts surely will affect our planning going forward. For us, honorable members, when we did our planning, our baseline expectations was around about 23 billion. And now we can confirm after the Treasury budget cuts that our growth on average is between 1% and 2%. Limited capacity, budgetary capacity, and it will challenge us over the medium term to see how we can optimize this budget. And I will reflect to you the impact on our operational budget, the impact on our personnel budget, but also, honorable members, the impact on the entities that is part of the Justice Vote, Legal Aid South Africa, the Human Rights Commission. So the basic point is, you know, whilst there is cost pressures in excess of 5 or 6% in certain areas, Justice now has a budget for 2021, of around about 21.5 billion, and it will in essence remain in the 21 billion rand range for the next 3 years. The important question is when the portfolio committee will have a look at our appropriation and need to pronounce on our appropriation is to look at, we were at 23 billion rand as a baseline. And then we've had some, additional money that will give me, that it came in, that will give us some capacity. But then also there has been the massive budget cuts. Now, if there's a positive part of this budget allocation is that for the information regulator, for the next 3 years, an additional 105 million rand is put in, or being allocated for expansion of capacity. So 30 million rand, 35 million and 40 million over the next 3 years. The big challenge for us as we plan all these outcomes and deliverables is the budget cuts. Now for us, we want to confirm to you, that as a department, we will plan within the context of the budget cuts. We just want to confirm that over the next 3 years, over 7 billion rand, budget reductions will be effected. 2.3 in the first year, the current financial year, 2.3 billion, 3.1 billion in 2022-2023, and another 2.3 billion rand over in 2023. Now, for us, the big challenge is, if we can primarily look in the current financial year, the first year of this MTF cycle, we are having across our entities and divisions a 1.6 billion rand budget cut on compensation of employees. And it affects various programs, administration, court services, state legal services, national prosecuting authority, and even the magistrates' salaries. Now, 1.6 billion will have a substantial impact. Even in our court service environment, 634 million rand budget reduction. In essence, honorable members, we are currently in the space where we can only fund the warm bodies. Furthermore, we will have budget cuts on goods and services, 175 million. On the IGS program, there will be also budget cuts of 100 million. Buildings and fixed structures, 220 million. Now, surely that will affect our, the maintenance and our building program. Our constitutional institutions, in public entities that is reporting to the minister will also receive budget cuts. Legal Aid South Africa, 182 million. SIU, 41 million. The Public Protector, 28 million. And 16 million in the current financial year for the South African Human Rights Commission. The important point, and challenge for all these entities and for justice is, how do we sustain quality of service? How do we ensure quality of spend with this reduced budget? For us, human resource planning, effective human resource planning, quality procurement spending will be the key considerations going forward. If I can go to the, you know, the budget allocations that this committee should consider, the committee normally looks in the Appropriation Act and approve budget allocations per program and sub-programs. The slide that I'm just reflecting, slide 6, gives an indication of the respective justice programs. And what this again confirms over the MPF period and over the four years, the previous financial and the next 3 years, that overall our budget increase will be 1%, some areas possibly 2%, but surely court services a 0% increase. Now, in this, a portion of our services, for which we are also responsible, is a magistrate salaries. And the appropriations surely confirm that there's a 0% increase in budget, a 0% increase in capability to appoint or improve conditions of service over the MTF period. So the direct charges component of the magistrate salaries, the magistrate salaries confirm the impact of these budget cuts across our respective programs. If I can share with you, again, your focus and your research's focus, honorable members, what is happening with our budget allocations for economic classification? Again, a different view of the same challenge, not a problem, but a challenge. Basically, over the MTF period, budgets for personnel will stabilize and will be on average 9.9 billion rand, with no additional budgets coming in. Surely also our goods and services will on average be just over 5 billion. An area of concern relates to our buildings and fixed structures, where you can see, where we previously used to come to the portfolio committee with 1.2 or 1.5 billion rand in buildings and fixed structures budget allocations. Now it is around about 700 million, and we surely really need to see how we can optimize that available budget. Chairperson, your oversight also, and honorable members, your oversight also focuses on divisions. I do give an indication, or the CFO do give an indication on the branch allocations. The branch or subdivision allocations, it confirms possibly two things. The increase in the budget of the information regulator on slide 10, where the budget somewhere in the middle will increase with 33% from 45 million to 106 million. It's an important feature of the branch allocation. Then on the IGS program, from the current 494 million, it will increase over the MTF period with about 11% to 684 million. This again confirms link to justice modernization, the efforts of the department to conclude investments in IT infrastructure. An area, and the CFO or DG possibly will reflect on that. You might see there is a line item for the commissions. For the previous financial year, the budget was 213 million. And the CFO will possibly reflect on a new money that will be reprioritized for the current financial year to ensure the conclusion of the work of the commissions. We also indicate you, just for completeness sake, the budgets for the respective regions, and then there we can proportionally see the size of Gauteng and KZN and Eastern Cape. But all of these budget allocations per region is informed by the number of courts, the number of service points, and they actually, you know, guide the respective budget, you know, allocations. A portion of our oversight, of the oversight of this portfolio committee, is surely also the independent bodies, the public entities, and you know, and the constitutional institutions. Slide 12 gives you an indication of the proportional allocations and the growth, you know, in budgets. We can see legal aid on average is now between 2 billion and 2.1 billion, with a limited growth of around about 2%. SIU, you know, a bit more, around about 3% increase of, you know, from 421 million to 454 million. Public Protector, on average, around about 320 to 340 million over the medium term. And the Human Rights Commission, also around about 200 million rand over the medium term. The one area that that assist us in our planning is earmarked amounts. Here we are fortunate, and I surely would want to share, you know, this with you. Earmarked amounts is where National Treasury has substantial oversight, and normally we can't serve this money to any other area. But why we have wanted to share with you the earmarked amount is just to highlight to you on office accommodation, an increase of around about 6%. But a sub-line item under office accommodation is municipal services, where the increase overall is around about 7%. The basic idea here is, or comfort here is that it seems that if local authorities keep their municipal charges within inflation range, that we will be in a position to service all our commitments in terms of municipal rates and charges, and service fees, because the budget, the growth is substantial. The big challenge for us is on facilities management. On the facilities management side, you can see the property management relates to the leases portion. The capital works relates, as I've explained to you previously, the building of new infrastructure. So there is, from the current or the previous years, 1.8 billion. We do have an increase of 19% year on year. That will make our current facilities management portfolio around about 2.2 billion rand. I surely would, CFO surely would want to share with you the impact on the budget cuts. Now that our capital budgets are constrained, the core question is, how do we optimize planned maintenance, but also day-to-day maintenance? There was this material budget cut from 121 million down to 68 million. Now, our challenge is, whilst our courts, have challenges in terms of maintenance, that we did 68 million for the current financial year, that we surely look at proper planning and execution of day-to-day maintenance to ensure that our courts are in an appropriate state. Surely the 68 million on average will give our regions around about 5 million rand, in order for them to have the capacity to ensure, the day-to-day maintenance of our facilities. The budget cuts, we don't want to deal with this extensively, but since 2015 and until the end of this MTF cycle, we just want to confirm to you that the total reductions surely is close to 15 billion rand. And we've got our work cut out as a department to ensure that we deliver our services. There is also a slide 17, which gives an indication over the next 3 years, what is the respective cuts across programs. Slide 18 indicates to you, how we, when we did the budget cuts, try to protect to the best of our ability the core function of the department, the primary function, and most of the cuts directed to support services. One of the big issues will be capacity. We do have a vacancy rate in our department, which HR can confirm. Over the next year, the accounting officer and the corporate services team must look attentively to our personnel budget and how to what extent we capacitate our core units. What we've done is what the CFO did, he did a costing of what is the our warm bodies, and if all warm bodies is paid, what is left for us for prioritization and for expansion of capacity. At this stage on slide 19, we confirm to you if we pay the warm bodies, what will we have left? Now we are saying possibly 114 million rand in the first year, 116 and then 117 million that we will have now. From that 114, we need to fill now critical minimum positions. It's quite obvious that it is surely not enough to fund all other other positions, and the organization must acutely look at how we're going to prioritize this. But 814 million rand is at risk in the current year because any salary determinations or increases in personnel costs, which Treasury direct, we must absorb ourselves, will encroach on the available 114 million rand. Chairperson, the other slides give you an indication of what is our discretionary budget. If people say to us, go and reprioritize, surely we do have, we've seen the benefit of certain operations now. We've seen a reduction in certain costs, travel and subsistence. And it's our job to ensure, as a budget planners under the CFO, to ensure how we can realize those savings and direct it to areas of need. And as we introduce new IT systems and automate certain processes, we need to quantify those savings so that we can take it back to our core functions. Slides 21 and 22, as a finance pack, practitioners, we just want to share with you the implementation risk. And surely what we advise internally in the organization, what needs to happen. We possibly will advise on efficiency in filling of posts, the time is just thereof, but also dealing with implementation plans, proper procurement plans. We surely need to look at the challenges of an unfunded mandate that is taking certain budgets away from us. We must ensure proper alignment. It's no use presenting an APP or a strategic plan. We don't ensure from the Office of the CFO appropriate resource allocation. We do, as a risk manager has indicated, we do foresee, we do have challenges with our systems, but we're working around this. So Chairperson, thank you. This is the end of the budget presentation.
Thank you very much. Chair.
Chairperson, thank you very much. In the main, I think this is the presentation we're making to these two, to the portfolio committee. Just two issues I thought I must flag that we may have missed One, it just relates to facilities in general. I have been to two to three provinces, Western Cape, Free State, and the Northwest. And in my engagement with the officials in those regional offices and the stakeholders, the issue of facilities is a major challenge. Our facilities are in serious state of disrepair, dilapidation, collapse due to aging and other related challenges. In most of the cases, you are told about leaking roofs, sewage blockages, lack of reliable water supply, regular and constant load shedding, and lack of power generators. These are issues that the judiciary raises with the department, and they've raised with me as well for the few days that I've been here, at least in those three provinces. And I know that those challenges resonate across the country. Now, the biggest challenge here is the dependence of the department on the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. However, we have decided that we need to develop a proposal to Public Works, and I'll be meeting with the Director General in the next 2 weeks to try and find a solution that can allow us as a department to develop a framework that will seek to address these challenges without having to wait for the processes of Public Works and Infrastructure that seem to take a long period of time. So this one area that I needed to flag. The second one relates to the general personnel in the department. I think our maiden age generally is higher. In terms of our records, we only have 25% of people that are under the age of 35. 23%, I'm correct, 23% out of the staff complement of 16,000. So this is a matter that we are taking seriously. And in the vacancies that we will identify with the few resources that are there, we'll try to improve that situation so that we build capacity that will be available in the next 10 years. In the next 5 years, we will be losing through attrition a lot of the most skilled and experienced officials, particularly at the senior management level. I thought Chair should reflect on those two issues, and with the permission of the Deputy Minister, this will be the end of our presentation. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DJ. Deputy Minister, do you want to say something?
Thanks, Minister. Thanks, DJ. No, I think that's, I'll respond, will help respond to questions. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Members, do you want to pose any questions? Let me note hands. Question or comments? I have Honorable Jelle, Honorable Ngola.
I'm using a new device, so I can't see where should I raise my head.
Yes, he's under the tree. So it will be Honorable Nomathemba Jelle, Honorable Ngola, Honorable Dennis Breitenbach, Honorable Nipot Jessens, Honorable Swart, in that order. Honorable Jelle.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And also good morning to the DM and the team. Chairperson, I'm sure, I was just looking, Chairperson, the slow, responding to your call for us to raise him. I'm sure it is one of the, it can be also, if I might be wrong, but also, you know, one of the things that one, when was listening to the presentation, whereby one got the feeling that it's like we are starting afresh. Everything, we are starting afresh. We are planning now because we've got the new DG. everything, it's like it's new. But without being unfair to our our DG, and I think he made the last comment that their staff complement is aging, which is one of the things that maybe worries him, giving us that 23% of those who are under 35. This gave me the impression that indeed we have an experience. We have officials who are very much experienced within the department that have been holding this department for quite some time, but without also getting the results that maybe the committee would be happy to say, at least when we get now the new DG, we are this far, and this is maybe the progress that we've gone far with up to this time. One gets very worried, Chairperson, when I just get the impression that we don't even have anything that has been done when it comes to modernization of this department. I heard the presenter, the other presenter, saying that they are having an aging infrastructure when it comes to IT, which we all agree, but I don't think that up to this far we are still going to talk about the issue of modernization without having at least a sign of saying this is the direction where we are going. I don't think that one is happy, Chairperson, to hear that, because I was expecting that maybe we would hear saying, even if we are planning, but if we can get more information as to for the past years that we have been here as a committee and with the officials coming almost every quarter to come and present these plans and all that, the things that we've been talking about, would want to say at least we are now having a smaller analyze when it comes to these issues, especially on the issues of maintenance online, the portal that our maintenance, there's this progress, Nyana, at least. We know that we are still going to get to that one. But the how the presentation has been given to us, it really made me shiver to say it's like we are starting afresh. And I don't think I'm really happy to hear that, Chairperson. I think that has to be looked into. And then I would also request, maybe because these were just the comments, the questions that I might have where I am now is that, Chairperson, the risk, on the risk, one of the things that has been identified, it is the poor contract management. And obviously there are officials, those who were responsible there. One will request the DG to give us maybe an information as to how far are we in terms of those officials maybe who are responsible, who could not do their part, that we find ourselves in this place. And then the issue of non-compliance is still coming as a risk. The issue of Chairperson is still coming. The issue of the wasteful expenditure as a risk also is still coming. So I think the DG must be having a plan going forward as to how are we going to deal with those issues precisely, because they're still going to hamper us. I appreciate that he has given us some dates where we would see the results of some of the plans that he came with. And I think we're going to, from now onwards, we're going to have the very same presentation. We want to tick, 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 tick. When you come back, DG, we want to tick and say, this we have, you have done, and it is done. We are no longer, our patient is really low when it comes to this, because we want progress. We might seem like we are becoming harsher to you. Apology for that. But unfortunately, our patient is really worning out when it comes to these issues. A plan like this will make us feel like we are really not going anywhere. So that I don't want to say a word that maybe would show disrespect to our officials. Let me say that those officials that has been in that department, that if you check our budget, most of our budget goes to the compensation of these officials. I think we have to be very, very, I don't want to say harsh. We have to be very strict when coming to making sure that if somebody has been given a responsibility, he does that and he does it efficiently and there's accountability. So this comment that I'm making, I think I would expect a response that you are saying, what are you doing as a new person? And also give us your experience up to this far, even if you came here March, you just came in. But I think the plans that you came up with today, they are the reflection of what you have discovered in that department. So maybe if in your response you can come, I can't even point out most of the things that I would want you to respond to, but if you can give us a picture as to these are the problems that you have found that led you to come with this plan that we have today, so that when we come next time, DG, we are ticking, and get responses and get progress. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Jala. Honorable Mora.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Indeed, let us welcome the presentation of the APP and the budget from the department. My question is on the awareness campaign. They take the form of media interviews, workshops, and visits in Dabas. I'm asking this, Chair, because the form they take will determine how cost effective will they be. The second issue, Chair, I want to say something on is on the GBV plan. I want to make highlight of two things on the GBV plan. One, Parliament is finalizing the three GBV bills. Has the department prepared itself in terms of the rollout of what is provisioned in those bills? And in particular, there is a very important matter there of the sexual offenders register. The second issue with the GBV matter would be, are there any, because in the last financial year, the minister and the deputy minister were busy establishing or launching sexual offences courts. Is the department planning to continue with the launching of the sexual offences courts in this financial year? If the answer is in the affirmative, how many are they planning to launch this year, this financial year? There is something that the department is reporting in terms of the time frames on the execution of estates. They speak on the improving and transforming the master's services. They speak particularly on as it relates to large estates. I want to check, Chair, that when they speak of the transformation of the master's office, the first thing that comes to my mind is that there's been allegations that the master's office allocates large estates for execution to white males in particular, and allocates the smaller estates to the black practitioners and the females in particular. If that is something to go for, Has there been a progress that has been done to that effect? And what is the plan going forward with regard to that matter? There's an issue, Chair, of repealing or dealing with the apartheid era justice related legislation. I saw, Chair, that in the attendance here, there is also South African Law Reform Commission. I would request, Chair, maybe that we get a report in writing as Parliament on the work that has been done. I mean, Chair, it's 27 years into democracy. In the ideal situation, wouldn't be still talking about repealing apartheid and colonial legislations until now. It's a burden that is not only of the department, which include Parliament as well. Now, for us to get a better advice in this regard, so as Parliament with the obligation for making laws, we get that particular briefing in writing on the progress that has been made in terms of repealing and replacing apartheid statutes. The last Chair is the online court system. Are they planning to continue? I think when Corona was rife in the country, which is mostly the last financial year, the online court system proved to be a bit effective. Is it progressing very well? Are they continuing with the online hearings and all that? Thank you very much. That's all from my side.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mola. Honorable Dennis Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning to everybody. Mr. Chair, I must align myself very seriously with the views of the Honorable Masekajele. The presentation is full of what's going to happen and nothing about what has happened. I'm a little disappointed. I expected a much more can-do kind of presentation given the state the department finds itself in. And given the last interaction we had with the department, I would have expected some sort of implementation already, and not just a really nicely set out what we hope to achieve in the future. So the less said about that, the better, but I find that aspect very disappointing. Now, in November 2020, the Minister addressed the Portfolio Committee and along with the committee expressed his alarm about the decline in the Department of Justice performance. This has been an ongoing issue, and it's now reached a point where it's very critical. The minister stated that there was a process in place to rebuild the administration. So the identified root causes were, he listed as follows: high levels of leadership instability, lack of capacity, lack of performance management, lack of decisive decision making, no defined organizational culture leading to a culture of non-performance, and the lack of an ethical tone. I would like to know today what has been done to address those issues, not what will be done, not what they plan to do to address them. We're 6-7 months down the line here, and I want to know what has been done to address those 6 critical issues. That is something that I would like to hear today. Then, Mr. Chair, the SMS vacancy rate is high, and I'd like to know what has been done to address that. How many of those vacancies have been filled? Not when they're going to do it, how they're going to do it, one day when they get to do it. What has actually been done? Has the skills audit been done? Do I understand the skill set of the middle and senior management? And if they have done it, tell us the results, please. If they haven't done it, I'd like to know why. Again, the performance management system, it's appalling. Well, it's non-existent. So how has that been remedied? The Auditor General made a range of recommendations. Which of those have been attended to, and what are the outcomes of that attention? If they haven't been attended to, why not? I don't believe it's necessary for me to mention them. I'm sure that everybody's aware of them. Then the DG mentioned in his closing remarks the attrition rate. Well, yes, the attrition rate is something of a problem, but it's a problem everywhere. What I want to know from the DG is what he's going to do, what plans has he put in place to retain those skills in some sort of mentorship program so that the people who are appointed have proper induction, proper mentorship, learn how to do the job most efficiently from those people who've got 20 and 30 years of experience in the department. You can't have it walking out the door on the day of retirement, replace it with a 20-year-old, and expect the department to run. What plans are in place to retain those skills so that they can be that they can be passed on to the new generation of officials? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Neville Roshan.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Chair. I would like to go to slide 50. Oh, sorry, interpreter's mistake, 70. Slide 70, the department's top risks. Many of my colleagues have already alluded to these risks, and I would like to join them in expressing the disappointment because this is all presented as if it's, you know, the first time that you're all presenting to us. So what has been happening in the previous years? I haven't heard anything about the improvements from advice from the previous years. And then still under slide 70, the inability, or you don't have to put up the slide, but I'm just quoting from the slide, the inability to implement COVID-19 amendment plan or adjusted plan to effectively manage the risks with the coming wave, so the third wave. So it means the first wave, we went through it and we succeeded. Second wave, we went through it and succeeded. Why is the department still saying the inability to manage the COVID? Because, I mean, by now we should be really familiar with how to handle COVID. We should be familiar with all the protocols by now. So I would like to understand, what do you mean by this inability to manage the COVID risks, COVID risk adjusted plan for the third wave? I'm concerned about that. We all need to be protecting ourselves from COVID, and you are now saying the department is unable to do that. We've been with this pandemic for over a year. You really should know how to deal with it already. My colleagues have covered other matters. So what I would like to know in relation to universal access for people with disabilities. I took note of what the department said, but I would like to know, how is the department going to do or going to provide universal access for people with disabilities in the service points and courts? If the department can explain how they're going to do it. I am extremely concerned about the surge of hate speech and hate crimes and the killing of people who are from the LGBTQIA plus community. The department, has there been an outcry condemning of these killings of people from the LGBTQIA plus community?
if there have been, it's not very audible, it's not seen. Has there been a kind of a statement from the departments condemning these kind of actions? And then for years we've been hearing about youth interns in different departments, different entities. From this department, I don't believe we've ever heard anything about youth interns. So where are your interns? Are they being absorbed into the department or not? And then I would like to add, I think a few of the other colleagues mentioned the concerns with the master's office and the problems of the master's office. 2 months ago, there was a little boy who wrote to the president about his lack of access to get funding for school and for meals for accommodation from the master's office. Yeah, I would like to know what happened with that particular case. What is the situation now? Have the funds been released to him? Yes, and he wrote specifically to the president. And let me just check. Yes. You mentioned applications for protection orders, online applications for protection orders, that it's been implemented. How are you letting the public know that this facility is now available and how they go about doing it? I don't believe I've seen anything, so how is the department giving out that information? And I will stop there. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable Stephen Sorge.
Thank you, Chair, and greetings to everyone. And may I also congratulate the DG on his appointment. He obviously realizes there are many challenges. And I also, from our perspective, wish to join the Honorable Maseka Jele, Honorable Breitenbach, who have expressed deep concerns about the state of the department and the lack of progress. And let's really grapple with this, Chair. We need to spend time about this. We need to really look into this. Yes, there are wonderful plans going forward. Yes, we understand the curveball of COVID-19, but we need to engage robustly, because this, as we know, this department is at the heart of justice. It is the heart of the constitutional democracy. And so we need to find a way of grappling with the hard questions, but also understanding the very important budgetary constraints that the department is operating under. And this is across the board with all departments. So with your permission, I'd like to spend a bit of time going through some of the issues and then speaking about the budget as well. Firstly, Chair, I would like to ask about the master's office, the progress with the SIU report that has been tabled, where a number of recommendations were made as to systemic problems with the master's office. I'd like to ask about the operation of the complaints management mechanism at the master's office. The vacancy rate, I appreciate again that is a problem relating to budget, but it could be that there are funded vacancies there. And of course, the issue I would ask, when last was the small estate amount adjusted? We understand that is the amount of 250,000 Rand. If that is adjusted upwards, it could release a lot of pressure on the master's office, because those processes are much easier to finalize. The second issue is the Solicitor General. It was touched on. I would like to ask whether the acting position, the position is only for 2 years acting capacity, whether that is going to be extended, given the fact that we received a very positive briefing from the Solicitor General at one stage. The third aspect relates to the supply chain management, and in particular, the issues relating to BASASA, the security contracts, and the global technology systems forensic investigations. There were 3 forensic investigations relating to justice. what is the progress in that regard? The fourth matter is the appointment of the Legal Services Ombud, Judge Siraj Desai. Is that office operational at all? And can we get an update on that? Chairperson, we had a very good meeting with the judiciary on the 28th of February. I would like the department or the Deputy Minister to give us an indication of the court administration model, progress that is being made on a political level or departmental level with the institutional independence of the judiciary. That's an ongoing issue, and we gave the undertaking that we would look as a portfolio committee very urgently at that issue. I also raised the issue of the funding for the Zondo commissions when with the minister. He gave a indication that funding would be found from the department, but now from Mr. Johnson, and I appreciate his candor, Mr. Johnson's candor, we've known him for many years, in laying out the budgetary constraints. My concern is where will the funds come from, where the Minister of Finance indicated there will be no more funds for the completion of the Zondo Commission. I need to know where that additional funding will come to ensure that the Zondo Commission completes its work. Chair, can I just then touch on the issue relating to the budgetary constraints? Now, I think it's time for us as members of Parliament to step forward and say a lot of this has resulted, and it has been mentioned by the President of this nation, of the state capture and corruption and looting that has taken place. You're fully aware that I served on the Eskom inquiry, the tens of billions of rands that have been stolen. And so it is for me absolutely disgraceful that units that are able to collect these stolen funds and lock away people have their funds depleted and reduced. It makes no sense to me, Chairperson. The SIU that is able to use the special tribunals to cancel contracts to collect money has a reduction in funding. We'll hear from the MPA later, the Asset Forfeiture Unit, Investigative Directorate, and of course, the Justice Department that has to run the courts. Chair, how can we allow this to take place when there are tens of billions of rands sitting that can be collected, that need to be collected, but our entities do not have the funds to do it? And in fact, their funds are being reduced. I feel very strongly about this. And I think, Chair, we need to start looking at solutions to this. One of the ways is looking at the CARA fund, Criminal Asset Recovery Account. The Minister has jurisdiction over that account. It is, I understand, for the compensation of victims of crime. But surely, a portion of those funds can go towards the funding shortfalls of the Department, the SIU, the NPA, the Asset Forfeiture Unit, and the Investigative Directorate. This is something we need to look into. We cannot lose more warm bodies in these entities and more forensic capacities in these entities. Chair, I would also then like us to seriously consider the issue of our powers in terms of the Monetary Bills Amendment Act. And I would ask our researchers to again look into that. I know it was amended, but surely we cannot continue to go with a begging bowl, the department going with a begging bowl to National Treasury, understanding the fiscal constraints across the nation, but there is a case to be made out that the department and these entities need their funding, and at least that we cannot afford to have this funding reduced. Chair, you have indicated the impact that this has on crime, the impact that it has on the economics. One of the biggest constraints of investors coming to South Africa is their perception of corruption and that it is not being dealt with adequately. And we saw when certain steps were taken recently how the rand strengthened. So it is critical that we understand that this department is at the heart of the access to justice, and a lot revolves around this. And I feel very strongly about this, that we need to be robust, we need to hold accountable, but at the same time, we as Parliament, we allocate the funds. We, it's ourselves. So at a certain stage, we've got to stop wringing our hands and understand that we appropriate funds within the fiscal constraints that the Minister of Finance has set up. Thank you, Chair. I hope you didn't take anything I said personally, but I think we are all in this together. And it's no aspersion on any member of this portfolio committee, but just in general, how strong I feel about these issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janja.
Thank you very much, Slalo, for your leadership and guiding us. I first want to welcome and thank the DG. This is probably his first presentation to this committee, if I'm not mistaken, as a new DG. So I think that's proper that we indicate that you are welcome, DG. And there's an expectation on him, Chair, on having to fly whilst he's fixing this aircraft. I also want to appreciate and welcome what, under his leadership, they have presented to us today. I want, Chair, to appeal to your leadership to guide us in the discussion of this very presentation, because, Chair, it is my understanding that today we are dealing with your strategic plan, even though it's not presented, it's taken as read, as well as listening to the annual performance plan being presented in front of us, which indicates where the what are the plans, what the department is planning. It is a forward-looking discussion. I want to appeal to you for your guidance. It's a forward-looking discussion as opposed to a backward assessing in terms of the annual report. Today is not the annual report. Today is the annual performance plan. We need to, when we conclude this meeting, we need to rise knowing that they have the plans that they have put forward, and our role is to judge the effectiveness, the integrity of the plans they are putting in front of us, whether these plans mean anything. I thought I really want to get, so that I don't get lost, in so that the expectation is a proper one. I also, at the same time, given what other members have said, want to suggest, Chair, that I think it's the right of this committee, if there are issues that we want more information on in terms of progress on quite a number of issues, we can always set a specific meeting for that to attend to those issues, so that we don't mix many of these issues. I'm saying that, Chair, because In October or November, can't remember the actual date, I think it was October, I mean November, when the department came in front of us, Chair. Our diagnosis and conclusion of that, and it's important that we remember that, we concluded in saying this department is dysfunctional, Chair, that this department does not even need a turnaround, it needs a rescue plan. It's important that we remind ourselves about that. It needs a rescue plan, and that everything else, I remember you in your conclusion saying it is demonstrating a decline, and we counted about 3-4 years of that decline, and that something needed to be done. Even before you go to the specific of the programs, whether it is the Guardian funding, it is the Solicitor General or the State Attorney's office, or any of the programs, we're able to say each of these programs, there is a challenge. And so today, Chair, if then the department comes in front of us and says, after that, after listening to you as a portfolio committee, in October or in November, the deputy minister and the minister summoned us. They pulled us together. We had a planning session in response to our harsh criticism as this committee, if you remember. So they said they had that. And after that, once a new DG was appointed, we were being told here that they also had another session where the new DG was putting things in place. And so what is coming in front of us? And this is the first question I wanted to pose to the DG, because I'm very happy, Chair, from where I'm sitting. If they are presenting things to us as a result of responding to fixing the department, if this is about fixing the department, I'm very happy to hear what the new plans are. So I connect with that. Otherwise, I'm never going to sit here and then want to listen to continuation of the old problems that don't give any results. And so my first general question to the DG and the Deputy Minister was going to be, is what you're presenting to us here today, does this APP respond to the need to rescue this department? As we said to you that we need a rescue. Is what you're presenting today, before I go to the specifics, a reflection of you planning this turnaround, because you don't have any other opportunity. You had more than 5 months since October or November, and I'm happy if you are indicating to us that the 10 points that you are presenting are a beginning of a journey to rescue and to turn around this department. If you say that, I'll be very happy. Whether it indicates how you want to change things, and sometimes it can reflect as new things, I'll be very happy with that. I thought, Chair, I needed to make that. With that having been said, Chair, I want to focus, because I've been given a particular work and task by my own party, and that task is that when it comes to this Department of Justice, my focus is on court services. I want to stay on court services. I'm not going to go anywhere else. I've been given that duty. And I want the DG to know that every time we meet, I'm going to be in that space. And in relation to that, Chair, in terms of those court services, I just want to raise the following issues in relation to that, because I'm really confining myself to that program of court services, Mr. J.P. Kosana. Firstly, within the court services, if you could indicate to me that, and I'm beginning to see a few of those things. I think I like this issue of modernization outcome, which aims to increase access to justice, and a lot of the other things that you have raised there. If you can confirm, because it does seem that you're making a forward leap in relation to this. But secondly, on the specifics, you're saying that you have identified in this APP 45 sites for audiovisual in the court. I maybe can bring just a slide, but I happen to miss what is the medium to long term, because you've got hundreds and thousands of courts in the country.
Sorry, Honorable Chancho.
Drop in the ocean.
Sorry, Honorable Chancho. There is this Galaxy 9. Can the person rename that Galaxy 9 so that you can know who he is or who she is? And after that, you must meet that Galaxy 9. You are disturbing our meeting. Proceed, Honorable Chancho.
Thank you, Chair. So I was making the point that I if you bring back that slide on the court services, where you indicate you're planning to do 45 sites in terms of audiovisual in courts. And my interest, I wanted to see the entire journey of that. If you have to have a 3-year plan beyond the 45, what are the other plans in your medium to long? I missed that. You might have heard that, given the fact that there's so much that needs to happen. That is going to be insignificant if you're only going to do that. Secondly, Chair, In the APP, one of the issues, we have a report from the Democratic Government and Rights Union from the Judges Matter as an NGO that produced a report about the state of infrastructure, the work environment, security in courts, and it is painting a very gloomy picture that we all know. And I'm interested to see in the APP, as you've also said, you, in terms of court infrastructure, you are, yourself are alarmed. I want to see whether, because they relate to issues of security in many of these courts that is almost non-existent, which affect the administration of justice. I hear you speaking about the maintenance, and I'll come to their risk issues, because number one in your risk register is this issue of infrastructure, aging and so on. But I don't think it's only aging infrastructure. If I may take you to Plettenberg Bay, a place called Beto today, you've got a new court in Plettenberg Bay. It's not old. You've got a new court where you use the IDT. I picked up, I mean, just last year, and it's now going to be rainy season, that court could not operate, and it just been built in the last 3 or 4 years. And it was flooded. So it has nothing to do with it being an aging infrastructure or maintenance. It was a new court. And therefore, I don't know how you attend to those kind of issues. If you go to the issue of the risk, I like that slide, but 6 out of 10 of the risks that you have identified are a combination of high risk and extreme risk, which means that we are more on the side of many of these issues you're putting on the plans not being realized, not being implemented. If you put what is in the red as well as the one that says it's high, well, the red is your extreme kind of risk. I also would have loved, Chair, to see Mr. Skosana, maybe I missed it, the issue of the magistracy bill. I missed whether it is reflected in your APP, because that is the work that one is expecting will soon come to Parliament. And I couldn't pick that up where it is as part of your activities of your APP. So you can see where that slide is. Your top three, which is in red, and then the rest, the second top three, it's also in that area of your a high risk. So basically 6 out of that says to us what you are presenting as have got high risk, and I have missed the mitigating factors as to how you're going to mitigate this kind of high risk that you have identified. So, Chair, I just wanted to make those comments. I think many of these, one would want to interact through the type of questions in Parliament, or to indicate that we might want to have specific sessions to drill into certain sections of the APP. Otherwise, thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janji. Can you remove the slide? Thank you very much, Honorable Janji. Indeed, it is a presentation of the annual plan, annual performance plan and budget that we are dealing with today, not the BRRR, where we deal with the performance of the department. But at the same time, I think you talked about the integrity of the annual plans. So members would look at the past performance to check whether what has been put in the plan is realistic. And I think the frustration of the members is based on some of those issues, which, for instance, on my side, because I'm still going to be asking questions before we close so that they can also be answered. How do you say we must approve an annual performance plan and budget that says it aims to reduce wasteful and fruitless expenditure by 70%. Now, we are talking generally a budget of about 21 billion. And you say you are aiming to reduce irregular expenditure by 55%. These two for me are too low a target. Too low a target. They don't correspond to the issue that Honorable Janji said you must look at the integrity of your strategy. At the same time, you were told that you must invest in financial administration and internal auditing, as well as professionalizing supply chain management. Up to now, I am not aware that you have been able to appoint an audit committee. And the audit committee would assist us in ensuring that there is reduction in wasteful and fruitless expenditure, there is a reduction in irregular expenditure, that the monies and the programs talk to each other. But to the last, to the best of my knowledge, it has not yet been appointed. By December of 2020, which is the third quarter, the end of third quarter, you had only spent 13.8 billion, which is about 65% of your budget. Now, how do I say you will be able to spend this whole budget, even if there are budget cuts? Because we must be able to face South Africans and to say South Africans, indeed, these cuts are too deep. The department is able to spend what it has been given. But now, by end of December, you had only spent 65%. And you promised last time, and I don't really see it. You promised last time that there is going to be a gender-based budgeting. I don't see it reflected in your APPs properly. There are snippets of it, but I don't see it as a thread that cuts across. So it's important that you must have these issues clarified, DG and Deputy Minister, so that we can be able indeed to fight the fight that Honorable Swart has said we must do. But we must be convinced of your ability to spend and spend carefully and efficiently the money that the taxpayers have given you. And you have been non-compliant in as far as 676 million, which is about 42%, which was spent without following your procurement processes. So this is money that is not well spent during the time when our people are experiencing serious hardship. So it's important that we must get an assurance that these annual performance plans indeed are going to deal with these issues. And that is why in October when you come, because we can't promise that we will be able to meet you before that time, because of the local government election, we must be able to see drastic change. We must be able to see drastic change, or else you will always run into serious problems where your plans are not going to be believable. Over to you, Deputy Minister.
Chairperson, thanks. I would ask the DG to start the responses, and I'll come in at the end.
Deputy Minister, thank you very much, and thanks, Honourable Chair and the Honourable Members. I have on the platform in attendance with me Deputies Directors General and Head of entities in the Department, who are part of this annual performance plan. And I'll call them, each one of them, to deal with specific areas that relate to the areas of their work. And once they're done, then I'll deal with specific areas. Before I identify them, I'll ask the Solicitor General briefly just to speak on some of the issues. And the Chief Master, Advocate Mafojane, will deal with all the matters that have been raised around the master's issues. And Advocate Kosana as well will deal with the court services related matters. And the DDG Corporate Services will deal with all the corporate services facilities, corporate services and HR related matters. And Mr. Matibe, who is acting Deputy Director General for Ms. Kale Pile, who is not here, will deal with the matters relating to legislative development, as well as the acting CFO will deal with matters of finance, as well as the Auditor General's findings that have been raised here. And I'll identify other colleagues as well, but broadly then I'll deal with the other issues that have been directed to me, as well as the issues that colleagues will not have covered. Mr. Fedisan Pandelani, the Solicitor General.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I do not actually recall that there was a specific question that was related to me, save for what Mr. Venile Masangu indicated during his presentation, which related to the contingent liability as the highest risk to the department. You would recall that I've virtually previously, after having been invited by this August committee, made a high-level presentation in relation to that space that impacts on the state attorneys, and I'm willing to answer any specific question. But with specific reference to the contingent liability as a risk, which is an aspect that we interrogated the previous time that I was here, I should in fact indicate that yes, indeed, that remains to be the case, that contingent liability, if not properly arrested, actually has the potential of collapsing the state. As at the moment, Chairperson and members of the committee, the caseload that we are dealing with we are in fact manually dealing with is 328,000. And those are cases that the state is now currently dealing with. And it is a huge risk, especially if you do not know what those cases relate to. So part of the annual performance plan, especially in my space, is to interrogate those cases with a view of trying to see what is contained in there. Up to so far, manually, I've only been able to interrogate 154,241, which means from the 328,000 cases or caseload, half of them still have to be interrogated. It is very important to interrogate these caseloads so that you can clean the data and be able to see the exposure that the state, in fact, is facing insofar as litigation is concerned, and also to eliminate opportunistic litigation and duplication of matters. And these issues or interventions that one will be coming up with are intended to mitigate the risk and exposure of the state. I must add, however, that all these systems that are there are not responsive to one interrogating that space with agility. It's all manual, and I think some investment might have to be made, because the repository of contingent liability for the state is the Department of Justice, owing to the fact that both the capital claims and the costs for litigation are paid from the Department of Justice. and ought to be recovered from those departments that are impacted. We have previously dealt with issues such as write-off of amounts because government departments themselves, those that are consuming state legal services, do not find it proper to, in fact, remit whatever is due to the Department of Justice. And the exercise to interrogate the data that is there has also other limitations in the sense that the 328,000 odd cases that one is interrogating as at the moment is not a holistic picture of the matters that in fact ought to be looked into. You still have those parallel processes for management of state litigation. And we are in fact coming up with all the policies that are violated, which are to be implemented in terms of the provisions of Section 3, Subsection 4 of the State Attorney's Amendment Act, clearly to do away with parallel systems where departments themselves could also be enabled to manage litigation and using all sorts of things. So we will actually be interrupting that space. Thank you.
Yes, no, I think we attempted to make another presentation.
Yeah.
That was not asked. Maybe if there, then we will come back to I think we did clarify when you made a presentation earlier on some of these issues. Maybe we'll come back to you when there are specific questions relating to the Solicitor General.
Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much. I have the honor now to ask the Chief Master to respond to the Master's related questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, DG, Deputy Minister, Chair and Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. I think this is my first engagement with this committee since I rejoined the department on the 1st of November 2020. And I must say as just an opening comment that indeed I came knowing that I'm coming to an environment that is not so attractive, a place that in the news the message is not a very good one, but I came with my eyes wide open, believing and knowing that I think I can make a contribution and I can lead a team and change perhaps the environment if we together commit and implement to what we commit to. And indeed today, as part of the presentation of our annual performance plan, the intent was to say to the portfolio committee, this is what we intend to do going forward. And for sure, what we intend to do going forward, Chair, as you indicated, must really give the committee some sense of an assurance that indeed we are likely to turn the corner, and if we have turned the corner and arrested the decline, we show some potential to indeed improve and do better than we did better before. My commitment coming into the master's branch was to say, we surely have people who can serve the people of South Africa better than we did before. I had been in the masters until around 2018, and I left, but I came back knowing that our challenges are there. But I agree with the Director General that our challenges are not insurmountable. These are challenges that if we were to properly analyze and put our heads and really commit and get the competent people to execute, things can turn for the better. Now, there were three or four questions or comments that were related or directed to the services of the masters, and I will try to take them in the order that I had recorded them as the honorable members were putting their comments and questions. The first related to the comment by Honorable Ngola as to within the improvement or the transformation of the master services, that he had captured somewhere that the masters are allocating large, the execution of estates that are larger to the whites and the small ones to the Africans or blacks. But properly, I think if the execution of estates we are talking about would be relating to the insolvency estates, because ordinarily in the deceased estates, we are operating under the two guidelines within the law that are speaking to the testamentary administration of an estate or interstate. So largely there, it is not a question of the master having any power to select or to direct or assign people based on any backgrounds, but basically people have the freedom of testation and the choice of the the master, but the department has embarked and entered the arena in trying to say at the provisional stage, which in my view is a very limited and circumscribed space. And I have been saying we are going to be faced with a situation that's going to say that in many instances, once we properly tighten, and if we had gone and succeeded with the previous policy on the appointment of insolvency practitioners within the circumscribed legislation that was merely saying in the provisional stage, if we had succeeded and gone and changed and introduced and created space for those who were previously disadvantaged and those who did not have the privilege and space to can even operate there. Had we succeeded, we were going to see the following, that the provisional stage was going to be actually limited to a holding up position provisionally before the final appointment, and the administration of the insolvent estates would not happen within that space of a provisional stage. So I think and I believe that the drive to try and say the correction of that position in the insolvency bill should try to say the government intervention in the appointment of liquidators must rather even go beyond the provisional state, but even in the actual administration of the whole insolvent estate. So that question basically, it is not a choice of the masters or the department neglecting and try or failing to try to create a space for those who did not who could not be afforded to deal with larger estate. But I think it's this thing that our business is inclined to appoint those that either they prefer or associate with or identify with them. But that space needs to be changed. Now, the question of Honorable Niebuhr specifically spoke to a specific case. I am unaware of that particular case in the Guardian's Fund. We do monitor and look and check on the presidential questions or queries, ministerial queries, and queries that are going to the Office of the Director General. So I would rather prefer in not just guessing and giving an answer for the sake of an answer. This committee is expecting of me to be honest with it and give a correct answer if I know of the particular case. Because we came to present the plan for the year, it is perhaps not proper or right for me now to can speculate on the answers. However, in general, the plan going forward in the Guardians Fund, and I think the Portfolio Committee was made aware of the challenge and the attempt to defraud the Guardians Fund in the Peter Mariesbeck Master's Office during September 2020. However, we have now gone to a point where we have received both the reports, IT or the reports from APSA for their IT team as well as the departmental IT, and have learned some lessons during that process. And what must be commended that of what was existing then was that we were not having an arrangement that would have allowed that all of that money, the attempt on the 10 million, would have been taken and swept without us identifying and only waking up when the whole of that money was taken and we could not recover part of but I can indicate that part of that we have or plans that we have is of the guidance fund is that start the one and want to introduce the other later on without ensuring that both teams from all these sides are on board and are from the financial and from the IT come on board with us so that we can then ensure that in the years to come or in the following year, we would then manage to do the situation much better. Honorable Swart referred to two questions. One related to when last was the 250,000 threshold increased to that amount for the administration of simpler estates. The last that we did was during about 2014-2015. The impact of the adjustment of that amount and the control around people appointed on those estates, irrespective of whether the amount is less than 250,000, where there is a property that involves minor children, our arrangement with Legal Aid South Africa is that they come on board and they properly manage that estate. But should we want to even or consider an increase, we are likely to, and we are busy looking at a model that will say specifically, the appointment in these estates of an amount of less than 250, shouldn't we be moving to a certain measure of accountability, but in a more simplified way than having to go through a process of the advertisements of the accounts in the newspapers and then the fully fledged liquidation and distribution account, but rather in a simplified forms that we would then issue as we issue the letter of appointment. That would at least to a certain extent say to whoever is the holder of that letter of authority over that estate, there is a certain measure of accountability expected. And once we have stabilized that environment, then one would then better speak to say the amount of this 250, sort of the determination of the amount through the regulation is something that can be done and the adjustment thereof. But one needs to consider aspects of saying, amongst others, we were linking these amounts with even samples or situations where in the Guardians Fund environment, the amount that is permissible that could be withdrawn over the period of the year as an interim towards the maintenance of the maintenance of the dependent or beneficiary could be kept at that 250. So it's not only one figure that we then adjust and leave the others and do them piecemeal. So we would in the future and when circumstances permit have to reconsider this. But this was done some with, just to be precise, some 5 to 6 years ago. Now, the systemic changes.
Can you try and be concise? Because there are still other people who need to answer questions, and we still have the MPA.
Thanks, Chair. My apologies. Just the other question related to the systemic improvements that were suggested by the SIU, most of as we could be aware, Chair, we have not received the final report. The interim reports are touched purely on legislation change that could inform how we change our systems, and we took note of these. And however, we are mindful of the fact that there is a process in place embarked upon to try and amend the Administration of Deceased Estates Act. And then I think I align myself to the comment of Honorable Janji as us presenting our plan in this phase. I believe I have covered all the questions and comments that would have related to the master's plan. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will yield to Advocate Jabez Kothana, the DDG for Court Services, to briefly address in a concise manner the questions that have been raised relating to Court Services. Advocate Kothana.
Thanks, DJ. Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I will go quickly to the responses, and please, I've noted all of them, and I commit to provide them in written format as well, so that we can remind ourselves as we come from time to time to committee what the responsibility is. And the first one, Chair, just as a general overview, the risk adjusted plan. I think we do have a risk adjusted plan, and I was pivotal in that process. When I was acting, I coordinated the development of a plan which enabled the department to survive and sustain critical services during the hard lockdowns, and that plan is still in motion. I think the message we did not wanted to indicate that it's dysfunctional. Perhaps we wanted to say that we have not yet reached the outcomes that we have intended to reach. I can say out of that risk-adjusted plan, we have been able to set up process in the court, and the Deputy Minister will speak to some of them, including the ones of trying to optimize the function of the courts despite the challenges that basically we still confront. Honorable Mwala raised the questions around the NRSO, in particular in the context of the GBVF, Chair. I want to say that following the briefing we made to the committee, which subs some few weeks ago, we were directed that we need to convene a meeting and we need to look into what can make that research work better. I must say, we did convene that meeting, Chair. I convened that meeting. I prepared a report, which I'm going to present to my principal, the minister, and the minister, and the DG. And I think it will then be en route to the Chair. I can just say, generally, that it was amazing that we got three registers. We got the Register for National Child Protection Register under the DSP department. We've got the register as the NRSO, and we've got the register for elderly people, etc. They're all intended to focus through protecting the rights of vulnerable persons, etc. And all of them have come up with challenges, which basically have come up at the kind of meeting. And we believe that our engagement basically should allow not only this portfolio committee, but should allow a clear view across all these registers, so they don't put systems and tools in place which not yield the results which have been intended for the end of the day. But we reserve for that. Whether we're going to extend the social offense court, yes, we are going to. But what we're doing now, Chair, we say one, we have reduced the standards for the sexual offences court, so we can basically allow more courts and more services in terms of sexual offences, but not reduce the quality. Initially, the 106 sexual offences courts were based on a very high standard, which was going to look into the new building infrastructure, special sexual offences courts, appointment of court preparation officers were based on that, and also the IT system in the court.
Of the now through the regulation,
we are making sure that we provide minimum standards. They should be applicable in quite a number of courts, whilst we still stay in the very same quality of standards. So in this financial year, we plan to designate 100 of those courts in terms of Section 55A, which should basically will be fully functional, whilst at the same time we are developing a framework which will enable us to expand the current sexual offense court. We started very roughly because we were guided by infrastructure, but experience has shown us that we've got many courts which are not basically optimally utilized because we're not guided by the caseload, we're not guided by the needs on the ground. Honorable Mr. Chan, in President Bank Bay, for example, we've got two sexual offenses courts, when in fact we need one in that court to be fully functional. So we have taken those experiences forward, and I think it will guide us in terms of adding the courts that we have, et cetera. Looking into the online court services, yes, we are moving forward to the online court services. I must say, several trials on a virtual platform have happened more frequently since the lockdown, and those have created more lessons to us, et cetera. We are already working on the bills to also expand the civil trials over the virtual platform to a criminal space, because as you know, the Criminal Procedure Act is still steeped in the past. It still talks about officers of court who must be before the court, they must be present, and the witness. So we're trying to work out around those legislation, while at the meantime, we continue to do what is permissible under the current legislation around the virtual platform. I must say that one of the important innovations which will be coming to space very soon is the online maintenance applications and inquiries. And we'll be launching that program in Durban at the newest court, which the minister have just opened. And we hope that after in this year, the remainder of the month should allow us to perfect that model so we can launch it throughout all the other courts. We need not go to court to make an application for inquiry. In the same way that SARS is able, we are able to file online, even get our money paid back by SARS. We should be able to upload all the requirements for maintenance inquiries, be able to conduct inquiries, and people can only come and get orders if need be. But obviously, we want to make sure that orders are also delivered online so that we basically reduce the commotion and the queues at the court, etc. I'm just thinking those which were very direct to us. Digi will talk to the issue of the LGBTI. Programs. I must say that we do have a vibrant programs in the department, and I think the GBVF talks to most around those functions, and I think DGF put measures in place to improve our communication aspect, so that such aspects such as this are basically giving the necessary priority in terms of our communication. Mr. Swart, Honorable Swart raised the point around CARA and admin model. I must indicate that we have completed the research on the court administration model with various options that basically can be suited to South Africa's constitutional democracy. We have scheduled an engagement with the minister because the minister has asked that we prepare a submission to cabinet, and we hope that matter will soon be presented to the portfolio committee once cabinet have guided us in this process. You remember, Honorable Chair, that there was an IMC set out which was led by them. The president at the time was the president, and I think the view was that cabinet must express its view on the broader policy framework that will basically inform legislation, then comes to cabinet. Now we are now in the space of finalizing the policy process, which will lead to a bill. And I think the idea is by the time we come to the minister come to portfolio committee, should be able to present both both scenarios, both the policy and also what the legislative imperatives are going to be moving forward, etc. CARA, Honorable Chairman, just said that CARA already provides provide for measures that are geared to fight crime and also to strengthen the criminal justice system. And the only thing that perhaps we have not made it so known to this committee, and as a result, people know CARA to be only supporting the victims of crime, etc. Our sexual offense, our national strategic plan on the GBVF on the in the presidency, most of the departments, social development, around Tuzela Care Centers, NPA, are supported through CARA fund. Tuzela Care Centers were introduced mainly from the donor funding by NPA in the past, and when they could not sustain them, we built in quite a lot of coverage from the CARA fund. So sexual offenses court, Tuzela Care Centers, DSD, whatever, they all get the funding. But the reality is that we don't have much from that funding. In fact, we are waiting anxiously to get more funds from the the ID processes out of the corruption, so they can build quite a very respectable balance on the CARA fund, so they can basically expand its mandate moving forward, etc. Moving forward, yes, 45 sites for, yeah. Let me first acknowledge and thank Mr. Honorable Janji for having been assigned to the court services branch, and I look forward to working with you, Honorable Member. We've already started that process, and I think the meeting we've had around the Massive Commission in February this year have already helped us to start fine-tuning some of the areas where we've been very slow, and I'm sure we'll be expediting our process around the space. I must just say, the 45 sites for audiovisual platforms are those sites which are in the hubs, in the bigger center. And I think that's the starting point. We want to make sure that the big court centers where we have the volumes in terms of cases, the volumes in terms of service delivery, have all the virtual platforms, they've got all the Wi-Fi solutions. We've addressed the whole issue of the network problems. Then from the 45 sites, we'll then go to the sub-districts and other sites which link the 45 sites. By starting the 45 sites, we are already expanding ourselves to all the provinces. So those 45 sites are not only in Gauteng. We have looked them across all the provinces. Then the next phase will then be building them through that. And we've already started to build those phase in our BOP, branch operation plan. So that by the time we come next year in the APP, we are going to upload some of those sites which will be ready by then into our APP. I've taken note in terms of the report from the DRGU, and I think I will deal with the issue that pertains to infrastructure in particular. DG have raised the point around infrastructure, and Chair, this has been a thorny issue for many, many years with our relationship with public service and public works and infrastructure. And I think DG have assigned me to develop a framework, and I've started to write a framework, and that framework will basically guide our interface. And because all this time I've been drafting SLAs and service level agreements, they say nothing, because if people miss that don't comply with the service, nothing happens. We are putting in the framework some of the measures that will enable us to withhold the mandate with public works. We are giving money to public works on accommodation charges every year. And of the largest amount of 3 billion that is spent on infrastructure, 2.1 billion goes to public works. The other ones for new infrastructure. Now we are saying we should be sent to public works. We will not transfer for you this amount we are expected to transfer for you unless you do 1, 2, 3, 4 in terms of this framework. We know we are going too far, but I think we are coming to a point. And I think the second point that we are pursuing that they devolve more functions to us because they've got capacity problems. Everybody knows. Let's do those things. We do not want engineers, rocket science engineering processes. Let us sort out the leaking roofs. Let us sort out the ceilings and the warning, the wearing of of the carpets, whatever, etc. Let them come and deal with the integrity of the infrastructure from the engineering point of view. And I think we believe that this, with the support of the ministers, we should go very far in terms of winning some of the battles. And I think that framework will present to Honorable Mr. Janji at some point, and then can also come to here to get some guidance moving forward, etc. Mr. Janji, I must just say that we do have the master bill draft in space, and I think Deputy Minister is still guiding that process, and I think at the right time we'll come forward with the process, and I think we will receive better guidance from your side, etc. Security, our colleague will talk about the issue of security. I must say, Chair, I think I've dealt with much of the questions at least for services, except those ones I will put in writing. But Chair, as I conclude, allow me to say this. One, I'm not one of the 25% youth in the department. I was surprised to learn that the 75% aging personnel in the department. And that's a clear message that we must give way to the youth to come and take over our position. And as we give way, Chair, we still commit to hold the young ones by their hands until they come to a point where they can keep this department afloat. And we are going to do, and you can hold me to my word, DG. After I've departed, I've left this door, I will contribute to the youth, go to Justice College, contribute an hour or two a week, teach the youth in terms of the areas I believe can benefit them to keep this department afloat, etc. I'm not going to be like Bafana Bafana. I'm not going to look for a coach of 69 years of age to come in the school department. That's why I'm saying, Honorable Chairperson, we support the DG. Our DG is young, and it's the sixth DG. It's not the 24th coach of Bafana Bafana. It's the sixth DG in the department, which basically shows some level of stability in the department. And I think when we come back to come and see the annual report, we are clearly going to show this committee that we have listened to you in November, October, and that we have moved from where we are. We are not as worse as we are. But today, I think that this is being a process of presenting the plans moving forward. And I think in the process, we are also learning on what are the better things we have done in the past. As a Chair, with those few words, let me thank this opportunity and hand over the DG. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Yes, Chair, I'll try to be quick with the colleagues that are remaining. I will invite now DDG.
I like that Bafana Bafana coach.
Yes, Honorable Tola, at least I'm not the 24th, I'm the 6th. So I'll invite the DDG for Constitutional Development, Dr. Gabriela Lafoy, to deal with the matters around hate crimes and awareness campaign on constitutional and human rights issues. Dr. Lafoy, you have the floor.
Thank you, DG. Honorable and good afternoon to the members of the committee. Honorable Nivout Drugen, we share your concern about the surge of hate crimes and hate speech committed against the LGBTI community. And as Constitutional Development, we have put in place a number of indicators to continue the very good work that is done in this area. The work aims to enhance and promote the rights of LGBTIQ persons by putting in place a number of interventions aimed at prevention, promotion, and protection. So we are only dealing with the APP indicators here, but what you can't see is our ops plan indicators, which would give you the full picture of all of the work around protection and promotion and enhancement of the rights of LGBTIQ persons. And so in the coming year, we will continue with awareness raising campaigns, which you can see under outcome 3 of the APP. The constitutional development indicators sit under outcome 2, outcome 3, and then again under outcome 8. And to get a complete picture, Of course, there's the ops plan, which doesn't come up. But you'll see that we've increased the number of awareness sessions, and this really goes to prevention, because we need to shift people's mindsets in order to address this this issue. We have also done some work towards policy revision of the NIS, which will be relaunched this year. We are in discussions with the EU about hosting a conference or dialogue that is going to look at further policy and legislative developments to enhance the protection of the rights of the LGBTI community. And then also we have a number of interventions which look at implementation. So the implementation and enforcement side we do through the rapid response mechanism, where we work together with SATS and the NPA, and that work also will be continuing during this year. So just to sum up, the work of constitutional development in relation to the prevention and promotion and protection of the rights of LGBTIQ works is a priority. LGBTIQ persons is a priority area, and the work, which is well established, is continuing this year, and we will report throughout the year to committee on the work that we are doing. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair, with your permission, I would like to yield to Mr. Nelson Matibe, the Acting Deputy Director General for Legislative Development.
Thank you, DG, Deputy Minister, Chairperson, and honorable members of the committee.
Mr. Matibe, if you would, please activate your camera so that the honorable members can see you.
I'll do that, DG. A question was raised around the delay in repealing and replacing apartheid-era legislation. Honorable Chairperson, I can indicate that as far as long back as 2004, the South African Law Reform Commission conducted a provisional audit of national legislation on the statute book since 1910, and it established that roughly 2,800 individual national statutes existed on the statute book. Now, the methodology that was adopted in the investigation was that in order to review the statute book, it needed to be done in a systematic way, by national government statute administered by national government department. The Law Commission identified the department, reviewed national legislation administered by the department, but only for equality and redundancy. It set out its preliminary findings and proposals in a consultation paper and consulted with the department to verify the commission's preliminary findings and proposals. The next step was to then develop a discussion paper in respect to the legislation of the department concerned. And upon approval by the commission, the discussion paper was published for general information and comments. Finally, the commission developed a report in respect of the legislation of the department concerned and reflected the comments made by respondents, and then the report was compiled. Out of this process, all legislation administered by government departments reports were compiled and submitted to the departments. However, it was left to the department to promote the recommendations made by the Law Reform Commission. Some departments accepted our recommendations and they then promoted legislation through their various portfolio committees. However, because what we call the Project 25, the statutory law revision was very limited in its approach. Now we are looking at reviewing apartheid-era legislation. The project is ongoing. There was a request by one of the members that we provide a written report. There's a report ready for the Project 25, which we could make available. It's, however, a pretty long report of about 130 pages. We can shorten it for the convenience of the committee. I think that's all I can say, Chairperson. Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much. I will now yield the floor to the DDG for Corporate Services, Ms. Connie Mamecha. Ms. Mamecha, you have the floor.
Thank you, DG. To the Deputy Minister, the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Members, and the DG, good afternoon. I will deal with the questions that related to the modernization, the SMF vacancies, and the inability to manage the COVID risk-adjusted plan, the interns, and as well as the legal ombuds office, and the long-term in terms of modernization relating to the audiovisual remand system. Indeed, Chairperson, we are building on our modernization program. We have completed and tested various online services, and those services would include the maintenance online, the deceased estate online, which we are definitely piloting this month. And we are also piloting in this month the trust services online. We have already finalized the business requirements and signed off on the protection order online. In relation to the expungement of criminal services records, we have already completed the development of that software, and we are at the moment finalizing the National Register of Sexual Offenders via digital channels. The business requirements for the specification for that is ongoing. Now, Chairperson, we have also finalized and implemented SMS notification relating to maintenance payment through our MojaPay system, as well as the domestic violence and family advocate information. Chairperson, we have also, in our quest to modernize our courts, we have also implemented the cashless courts by deploying at least in 25 courts POS devices, which is point of sale devices. And this will assist our court Chairperson in terms of payment of bail monies via those point of sale devices. Our plan in terms of this new APP is that we will be rolling out in 400 courts in terms of that cashless court devices. We are also rolling out Wi-Fi in various courts, Chairperson, to enable those modernization initiatives. 43 of those courts have already been rolled out with the Wi-Fi system. In terms of the judiciary e-workspace, Chairperson, we are at the test testing stage. And there was also a question that related to what is our plan going forward in our outer for a 3-year period in terms of the AVR and the court audiovisual system or solution. We have planned, Chairperson, that in this financial year, we will be rolling out about 45 courts. And in 2022-2023, we will be rolling out about 55. And in 2022-2024, we'll be rolling out for about 70 courts. And just yesterday, Chairperson, we were at the Northwest. We were in interaction with the regional court president, who also indicated that in the Northwest, all their courts have already been connected. I will also deal with the issue of the MS vacancy rate. Indeed, the last time we appeared in the portfolio committee, our SMS vacancy rate was very high. It was at more than 22.5%. More than 24%. We are now sitting at 22.5%. We have, out of the 38 vacancies that we have at 22.5% level, 23 of those vacancies have been advertised, and we are
and we are also mindful of the fact that there are
23 of those vacancies are looking at advertised, and we are accommodating them in the remaining 114
and we are also mindful of the fact that there are
the remainder of that, so we are looking at
accommodating them in the remaining 114 at a lower level, more especially in the course, in the master's and in the family advocate space.
The advocate JP Skosana has actually dealt much with the issue of the COVID risk adjusted plan, how we're managing it in terms of our risk, as it has been identified as one of our top risks in the risk register. Just to say also, just to indicate also, Chairperson, that we have, in terms of implementing our RAP, our risk adjusted plan, we have established various governance committees from the national level to the provincial level and the local level. We've got what we call COVID steering committees, justice operational steering committees, JOSC. At the regional level, we've got ROSC, and we've got ROSC, which is ROSC at the local level. So we are managing those and making sure that we monitor that each and every employee adhere to the health protocols in terms of our risk adjusted plan. Chairperson, going to the issue of the interns that we have, additional to the existing ones that we had in the financial year, we have also employed about 254 new interns, and we have just signed an MOU with FACITA for additional 30 graduate interns and 87 candidate attorneys that we will be employing in this financial year. And our aim there is also to look at the ages between 18 and 35, so that we also consider the fact that we need to increase our youth complement in the organization. In terms of the Office of the Legal Ombudsman, yes, we have began the process of operationalizing the office. A team of officials with an acting director have been seconded to the office from the department, and they are currently busy with looking at finding an office space where they can operate from. A meeting between the judge Desai, and the team has been scheduled for Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday to brainstorm on how they are going to be operationalizing it. But in the meantime, Chairperson, while they are still looking for an office space, we have dedicated 2 cell phones that will have a number that will be advertising for those that would want to submit their queries via cell phones in the meantime. So that number on Monday will be given to Judge Desai and for the team to publicize it for the community. I think I have dealt with almost everything that I needed to deal with. On that note, Chairperson, I would like to thank you.
Chair, thank you very much. With your permission, I would like to yield the floor to the Acting Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Nhlanhla Mthembu, who is with Mr. Johan Jansen, to deal with the issues around gender-based budgeting, as well as the reduction of wasteful and irregular expenditure by 70% and 55%. Mr. Mthembu, I yield the floor to you.
Thank you, DG, and Chairperson, committee members and colleagues, good afternoon. I'm not too sure, DG, whether you can see my face.
Certainly we can.
Yes, we can.
You just remove the video.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. Thank you very much, DG. There was a question posed regarding the by the Chairperson regarding the target set for irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, that the targets are low. And I want to in a way concur with the Chairperson, but provide this context that Chairperson, this relates to historical irregular and wasteful expenditure that you want to push in dealing with them to make sure that they are indeed, you know, dealt with and eliminated, so that at least our balance will continuously reduce. That is one aspect. But the second aspect is that in our operational plan, we are sitting with also a similar target where we are saying for current financial year, our target is that if there's any, you know, irregular or fruitless and wasteful expenditure cases that could be picked up in one way or the other, that they do not exceed, 5% of our total expenditure for the current financial year. But with regard to historic cases, we are working hard to make sure that those cases indeed are dealt with, and that the balances are indeed reduced. With regards to gender-based budgeting, gender-based budgeting is, though it may not appear in various targets of the APP, but it already sitting in all our cost items of the budget. For example, as part of our recruitment drive, in particular at SMS level, middle management level, and all other levels, the department is working hard to make sure that at least there's gender balance. At SMS level, already most of the positions that you want to fill are targeting women, in particular even in the finance space. Similarly, with middle management level, as well as many other levels below that. But we're also dealing with this. You have seen, Chairperson, that in our APP, we had included one indicator that is specifically dealing with procurement that will be targeted towards female, you know, suppliers, which is about 10%. And that's what we are, as a department, we are also doing in response to promoting women participation in all of our procurement activities. With regards to our current expenditure. Chairperson, you when you were raising your or when you were making a comment, you used our December reported expenditure pattern as part of reference. And indeed, our expenditure was not promising at the time. It was sitting at about just over 60%. And I want to confirm that, Chairperson, during the fourth quarter, our expenditure moved by over 30% to an extent that by the end of the financial year, our total expenditure performance was sitting at 95% against our budget allocation. 95%, yes, it may not be the most desired expenditure performance, but indeed there was a huge improvement in the last quarter in terms of our expenditure performance. I want to also to confirm that a lot of positions had been advertised, which some of them had already been filled, both in the department, in the NPA, and in the magistrate commission, which definitely will then see our expenditure performance in the current financial year improving. About 60% or just under 60% of our budget is on compensation of employees, and the more we fill our positions, the more our expenditure patterns will improve, but that will also have indirect, you know, implications for our goods and services budget, because it means that we'll also be having more people to be able to help the department to move all the projects and programs that are budgeted under our goods and services, which in turn will improve our expenditure performance. We have also looked into our procurement processes to see how best we can really use them to assist the department's expenditure performance. And Chairperson and committee members, we have put in a system that will ensure that, one, that all our procurement initiatives are awarded before existing contracts expire 2 months before the expiry of the existing contracts. That is one initiative that we have put in place. And this will also have, you know, a positive, you know, impact in terms of us also drastically reducing any opportunities of contract extension, but any opportunities for any, you know, a contract that will continue post the end of the contract, that's resulting to irregular expenditure. So that's what we have put in place. I want to confirm that SM positions are being advertised and are being filled. The DD contract management position, its shortlisting has happened in this week, which will also make a positive contribution in the improvement of our contract management processes. And I want to believe that the two directors, strategic sourcing and contract management, as well as acquisition and logistics management, would be in the advert in this weekend, which would also assist in making sure that we have stability in our SDM processes. And our target is to make sure that within 6 weeks or within 2 months, all those positions would have been filled. Audit has already started, it's in both national office and in the regions. I know that this week they were in Gauteng region, and I think they are completing their work this week, and next week is going to be Eastern Cape. And we are having an audit steering committee meeting on a weekly basis, which I chair. And so far, committee members, we have not received any matters that are concerning at this stage. We'll see as they go to all the other regions and state attorney offices and all other service points what we pick up from there. I think I would want to pause here, Chairperson, and I'm sure that matters pertaining to state capture funding as well as the issues around both us, I'm sure that the DG would be able to handle that. Thank you.
Sorry, Mr. Mtembo. Are you saying that you have targeted 10% of procurement to go to women businesses? Is that correct?
It is correct, Chair, at this stage. Just 200% owned businesses owned by CIMIC in terms of our discretionary procurement, meaning tenders. Because yes, in the past, there would be a procurement where women were benefiting, but to find that they are directors, they are partners in those companies. But this 10% is basically targeting 100% owned, you know, a business. We have been allocating business to female, you know, companies, but when one was checking at the our performance, it was under 5% for me, which was not a good performance. So we'll be having targeted, you know, interventions to make sure that at least we do achieve that 10%. But if you perform more than that 10%, it would even be better. But because we are still starting to target those 100% female owned companies, we said we'll set the target at 10%, which will be increasing in future years. That's it.
But you are aware that there is a cabinet approved of 40%.
Oh, no, Chairperson, then I may have missed that. We will then amend accordingly at the opportunity that you'll get. But what we'll then do is that in terms of our own operational plan, we will amend accordingly so that we sit with 40%, but maybe when the opportunity to review our APP, we will then amend this target accordingly, obviously with the permission of the DG and the Deputy Minister. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DG.
Chair, just for your comfort on this matter, I have instructed the colleagues in strategy to make sure that the branch operational plan, which Mr. Mtembo is responsible for, must raise that number to even more than 40%. So while this 10% is a base, the requirement is more than 40%. So I'll still monitor it from the branch operational plan. And even when we report, I'll make sure that we don't run away and focus on the 10%, but we'll focus on the cabinet required 40%.
As you are still here, I think there's one issue that we did not pick up. If you can just respond to it, or somebody responds to it, from the APPs, it seems that a target of 3% of people living with disability was removed. Is that correct?
Was it removed? The 3%.
Thank you, Chairperson. That target is managed at the business operational plan. It's not removed, but it's managed at the BOP.
For our own monitoring purposes, we must be able to see what we monitor. So if something is hidden somewhere, we can't be able to monitor it. It's like that budgeting for the woman, the gender-based budgeting. The more you explain it, we won't be able to see it. And then for us, it will remain as if it's not there. So I think there will be a greater transparency.
We'll do that, Chairperson. But I also need to mention that in the previous financial year, Chairperson, this target was achieved. So that is the reason why actually we moved it there. But I think we hear what you're saying, and I think it's going to be important that we actually, as we report, we inform the committee about it as well.
Thank you very much. Okay. I see that there. Sorry, teacher. I think there are members who want to make follow-ups. Sorry, teacher. Honorable Nivold Trushan and Honorable Janji.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not sure if I missed the response to my question with regard to the universal access for people with disabilities. And I would like to add to the strategy, the national strategy on the universal access of people with disabilities. I just want an update to that, but I wanted to know, you know, a more detailed breakdown of the interventions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janji.
No, thank you, Chair. My apology for interfering in your chairing. I just got curious on the and I decided not to wait until the end so that the DM when he comes and the DG can speak to that as well. But I'm not expecting a response today. It's on the issue that you raised, the gender-based budgeting. I am happy with the response that has come in so far, but it's limited. Well, the response is important in the sense that it speaks about how they prioritizing women appointments. That is important. But I want them to do more homework to go beyond that, because gender-based budgeting is not confined to women in terms of appointment as women. They need to just do work and clarify that, because, for example, when JP Skhosana says they are prioritizing the issue of maintenance court as virtual, that speaks to that. So if you're prioritizing your kind of gender base in those kind of things, your issues of sexual court, so want to see that in the other plans, how the plans themselves, because we're mainstreaming, this is the issue here. You are mainstreaming the gender based, so that it goes beyond just us seeing a woman in a particular position. It's how the services are responding. I guess that's what you're looking for, and I'm saying I don't necessarily need them to respond to that, but that's something that they need to go back and work on so that they lift up those issues. And I'm saying I'm picking up one or two already that, in my view, is responding to issue of gender-based prioritization and budgeting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Janji. Teacher.
Thank you very much. I think the leaf of wisdom just that came from Honorable Janji is very helpful, and I think it helps us to be broad in terms of what we understand to be gender-based budgeting. And indeed, when we come back, we'll be reflecting on those. I would request Mr. Mahlangu for under 2 minutes to deal with the issues around the apex risk and the specified mitigating factors. Mr. Mahlangu?
Thanks, DG. Honorable Chair, with the issue of the risk number 8 that deals with COVID, I think DDG Corporate Services responded partly to it. I just want to add a few things on that risk. We are currently having courts in the department that are being upgraded. We are temporarily using structures that are mobile offices that are not necessarily compliant to the all the controls because of their size, to an extent that public needs to get the services from those offices. And beyond what we're trying to do to save our officials together with the public from the pandemic, beyond the mask, we've provided our officials with some visors to ensure that we minimize the risks. However, we're also speeding the process of turnaround in relation to the specific services that the public come to those offices, so as to ensure that they don't spend much time in that. Two, we've got officials with comorbidities. And in this case, some of those officials, our function It's mainly to service the public, and some of them are our court clerks, whose function is solely in the courtroom. So we find it difficult as a department to relocate such officials, much that we are trying our best to ensure that we keep the safe distance, but we cannot remove them most of the time from their service points due to the function that they are charged with. Lastly, Chairperson, I think from time to time when we get the regulations from the NCCC, in some cases we find ourselves whereby we are to reduce capacity at our service points and not necessarily operate 100%. And as our small cause, whereby you find only two officials are charged with a certain responsibility, and we to address the issue of not having 100% capacity at the courts, we implement rotation. And when one official is on rotation, officially so, and one is on duty physically at work, then should the person that is at work fall sick, then we try to recall the person who's on rotation, but it takes time. At that point in time, service delivery is compromised. Now, coming to the mitigation plans, the colleague, the DDGs that has already made submissions, starting from the Solicitor General, some of the mitigation plans that are in place, they've already talked to. I remember I also indicated the issue of the contract management as to what is in place. And Advocate DDG Corporate Services has already indicated as to what the department is doing in addition to what I said earlier on, in making sure that the vacancies at the strategic level are being addressed. I think, Honorable Chair, for now, that's what I have to share with the Portfolio Committee. Thanks, not unless there are other issues that needs to be attended to. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chair, with your permission, I would like to invite Advocate Skosana to deal with the question on universal access that was raised by Honorable Velmani Voutbrachen in a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. I'm trying to put my camera on here. It's not responding positively. Thank you, Chair. Two aspects have been attended in terms of that. Firstly, our model of sexual offences courts already include within it the whole element of universal access to justice for people with disabilities. And what we have done in terms of that, Chair, one, we put in the development of a minimum standard that should basically cut across all the courts. We are using the social offences court simply because the infrastructure there is already compliant or amenable or kind of more improved towards addressing those kind of challenges. And part of the minimum standard that we are putting in the document talks to matters like your own access in terms of physical access to the courts, as well as pertaining to sign languages, for example. Ms. Pilewa should share that the introduction of the amendment to your constitution that includes the sign language as one of the official languages is part of our APP in this financial year. And not only have we started to wait for legislation, we've already put in place programs that start building in this kind of service at our courts. We are in liaison with the NGOs that basically should help us build a pool of those service providers, so that by the time the legislation comes to space, the department have put in forward measures in place to meet that kind of consolidation. Because when it gets enacted, it will basically be a matter of the constitution, and any non-compliance will basically expose government to a myriad of litigation matters, whatever. So we're running parallel with the process. But I think we will be able to share with with the committee, the minimum standards we are developing as part of meeting the basic needs of persons with disabilities, and we're expanding them to all the courts as we move forward. Thanks, DG. I hope I've covered part of the questions as asked.
Thank you.
Chair, with your permission, I'll briefly speak to some issues that the colleagues have left out for me. The first one relates to consequence management as part of what has been identified by the Auditor General in the report of the previous financial year. We have started efforts to rebuild the Labor Relations Unit, which had over the years had challenges that led to a collapse. But we also have committed ourselves to getting an external capacity in a short-term contract to come and address all the backlogs insofar as grievances are concerned and disciplinary processes are concerned. And our plan as the executive, senior management, is that by the end of the first quarter, which is end of June, we'll want to reduce all grievances or disciplinary matters to under 5%. Now, part of what as well I've tried to implement or I'm implementing is we have what contributes a great deal to our irregular expenditure is contracts that expire and then there's a request for them to be extended. I've told the acting CFO that any request that he makes to me to extend expired contracts must be accompanied by a plan on consequence management to say who was responsible for the expire. Because for the few weeks that I've been in office, I have had to deal with many contracts that have expired. And of course, part of what we're doing as an intervention is to fill those vacancies in contract management. And we currently have a challenge, we as you will know, in relation to those forensic reports that were presented. The chief financial officer, the chief director of supply chain, and the other senior managers are currently undergoing disciplinary processes. As I said during the minister's overview, our plan really is that in the next 30 days, these cases must be concluded. There have been delays since last year. COVID was used as an excuse, but also as part of the strategies of defense, they have been deploying all strategies that have led to these delays. So we have impressed on our representatives to make sure that these cases are concluded in the next 30 days. Now, the issue of vacancies, yeah, we will try and deal with them as well in the next, in this current quarter to make sure that those other vacancies, the director of contract management and the deputy director, and the other senior management related posts in that space are also filled. The second part relating to the SMS vacancy rate, I think we have sort of crossed the 50% mark in terms of dealing with what were vacancies last year. In the executive management committee, which I chair, you will note that some few months ago, the director general was acting, the chief master was acting, the DDG for corporate services was acting, and so on and so forth. And there was also an acting for constitutional development. So half of EXCO now has newly appointed or newly assigned members. And at that level, I think we are only left with the chief state law advisor, which process some advice as well will be concluded by the end of this quarter, which is end of June. And linked to that, of course, the acting of the Solicitor General is not the same as the other acting. It's a too generous situation because the Act specifically makes mention of the fact that the Minister can appoint an acting Solicitor General. However, I will engage with the Minister and the Deputy Minister to move the process forward for stabilizing that space so that we move away from having an acting Solicitor General to a long-term Solicitor General. There was an issue about what we are doing to build capacity to deal with attrition and so on and so forth. I have asked the DDG for corporate services to work on a talent management, career pathing, and succession plan. So they have a clear instruction in that respect that by the end of this quarter, we should be having that plan so that the experienced colleagues, before we lose them, they should start exposing and training the new bridge that will take over the baton. And we're grateful to people like DDG Advocate Skosana, who really indeed has availed himself and is assisting us a great deal in terms of seeking to build that capacity, to build that new leadership that will manage this department into the future. And he continues to avail, you know, his experience and skills to all of us in EXCO, and really is assisting us. We have, just like the DDG has said, we got extra assistance funding from SACITA, and we'll be able to absorb over and above the 250 interns that we have, 30 non-candidate tennis interns and 87 interns that will be placed all over the country in the offices of state attorneys. But what we are doing as well, we're trying to develop a framework on internship that will lead in some way to identification of the best, the brightest, and cream de la cream that will absorb into the department. Part of what I've discovered since I came in and I'm interacting with the department, I faced a very terrifying reality that in the core branches, you don't have entry level to the, there's no pipeline that allows people to come in into the area of masters, come in into the area of legislative development, to come in into the area of court services and constitutional development. So what you see is the capacity in the support related areas, and this shocked me. But I didn't stop from being shocked. I have told the DDG Corporate Services that we need a clear plan that will make sure that we build capacity and reopen those entry points for the pipeline, because it can't be that the Department of Justice doesn't have posts at the junior level to absorb the newly qualified young lawyers who are, you know, who are out there and would want to be trained and be exposed to the strategic management of the Department of Justice, so that when all of us leave, we can comfortably hand over to them. The issue of hate speech and the LGBTIQ plus community and the spike in violence and incidences of, you know, murder that we have seen, Honorable Nivo Drachen, I must say shamefully, I must admit that as a department, we dropped the ball on this matter. And we are aware of that. We have allowed structures like the national task team, the provincial task team, to collapse. And we are taking drastic steps to address the situation. 2 days ago, the minister, the deputy minister, and myself met with the community. And they have unambiguously presented their concerns about the non-availability of the Department of Justice in addressing these issues. And we have committed ourselves, we have given the next 21 days that on my part, administratively, I'll make sure that we address the challenges in the department. But the minister and the deputy minister at their level will address the high level issues. I'm sure the DM will speak to some of those issues. So it's a matter that I'm prioritizing to build this capacity so that even in the programs that we're talking about, in the operational plan of the branches, will want this issue of the LGBTIQ plus community prominently reflected, and will monitor it, and will be willing when we come back here to give an account of what indeed we will have done. The funding of the State Capture Commission, Minister has spoken about the 75 million. The 75 million was a deficit that the commission incurred between January and March. Now, we approached Treasury, and Treasury explained to us the challenges and the constraints they had because the budgeting process was finalized. So the department was asked to scrape around and see if we could find money. And indeed, we managed to find the 75 million to fund the deficit of January to March. As honorable members know, the commission's term has been extended by court from the 1st of April to the end of June. And we have asked the secretariat to give to us a projected budget. And they told us that they will require about 90 million. We have approached Treasury and impressed on Treasury that the State Capture Commission is not a Department of Justice commission, despite the fact that we are the custodian of the Commissions Act. But the funding thereof it would be unfair to say must come from the baseline of the Department of Justice. We have in the previous financial years as a department come forward to rescue the commission by money that we had that was coming from our under expenditure. But our commitment was that this financial year, our expenditure has to be up somewhere in the region of 99.9%. And with the capacity we have, I'm confident that we should be able to fund. So I'm in discussion with the Director General of Treasury to find ways and means, including possibility of the rollover of the budget of the department that was not expended last year into this financial year so that we can fund the 90 million that the commission requires. For now, what we have done for the month of April is to avail 4.4 million that just pays for the salaries of the commission staff and the miscellaneous services, including communication. So the discussion continues between me and the Director General, and we hope that soon, through the rollover, we should be able to find that required 90 million. And we can only hope and hope that it won't be more than that 90 million, and that 90 million will assist the commission to conclude its work by the end of June. The audit committee, Honorable Chair, we have extended the current committee because their term came to an end at the end of the financial year, but the audit period continues until end of June. So we have extended them, but we have done an advertisement and members of public have responded. So in the meantime, we'll run a process to ensure that by 15th of August, we have a new committee. We met with the committee already, and yesterday there was an induction of the two new members, but we're also taking them through the plans as an entire committee. And we're planning that the committee will be able to brief the minister and the deputy minister sometimes next week. And I think when we come for the BRR, we hope that we'll have an opportunity to come with them because they shared some of the concerns that the portfolio committee has shared throughout the whole of last year. And they are assisting us a great deal to attend to some of the issues and nip in the bud the challenges that the department is facing. Towards closure, maybe Chair, the question and then a fundamental question that Honorable Janche had raised about whether the plans that we have respond to the request that this committee has made. We upon my appointment the second week, I met with the chairperson of the Public Service Commission, who told me that he heard that the committee was considering having us placed under administration under the Public Service Commission. I then invited him to come and meet the entire senior management of the department, and he made this presentation and he raised this concern. Collectively, as the senior management, we made a plea to him. We said he must give us 100 days, starting from the 1st of April, which will end by the end of June, which is the first quarter of the performance year, that he must allow us to implement the turnaround plans that we have. And we said to him, if in 100 days we are not turning the corner, we are inviting him to come and put us under administration. So this is the commitment that we as the senior management of the department have made. And the answer to what Honorable Janshi was raising about whether these plans indeed respond to that call, the answer is in the affirmative, that indeed this plan that the senior management of the department has come up with was responding to the concerns that the portfolio committee had raised. And when we look at the performance of the last quarter, January to end of March, the light at the end of the tunnel is beginning to be getting brighter because the performance in the last quarter indicates that we've broken through the psychological threshold of 60%. You'll recall that 2019-2020, the records show that the department was performing in the low 50s. And we think that this indicates that we have arrested the unabated downward spiral and regression. And this could be an encouraging news that indeed the department is about to turn the corner. In conclusion, Chair, there are just key 8 points that as senior management, we have identified, they may not be coming out clearly and prominently in the plans, but that are embedded in the plans as part of our turnaround. There are these 8 points. One was to have us make sure that our threat plan and our APPs are clear and concise and follow the SMART principles, and we're clear about the 77 objectives and under which programs they have to be identified. Over and above that, we are institutionalizing having branches have operational plans that seek to expand on those plans, including our regional offices have been directed to develop operational plans that directly speak to the APP and have them cascaded down to the court and area court management level. And over and above that, we have agreed that the senior managers, their performance agreements will clearly reflect the plans as contained in the APP and in the strat plan. So we will know who is responsible for each outcome. And even when we come before this committee, each of the senior members will bear responsibility for none of a poor performance in their areas that they are responsible for. Second, the structure of the department, which has to follow the strategy that we have. We are finalizing it, making sure that people are placed in the right places in terms of the structure. Third, human development, capacity building. We have finalized the strategy for the repositioning of the Justice College that will make strategic interventions in terms of developing skills for the officials. As a result, this month we'll be conducting skills audits to determine the skills that people lack in the department. And linked to that as well, we've agreed to conduct culture and climate survey this quarter in order to get a sense of what the officials think about the department and make sure that we address those challenges. So in this respect, we are reviewing the Departmental Service Delivery Improvement Plan, which was in place over the past 5 years, and we commit to finalize it by the end of this quarter. And seven, the issue of compliance has been a major concern from GPSA, that this department has not been in the habit of complying with laws, regulations, prescripts, and directives. We have agreed that the performance agreements of every senior manager will have to reflect this aspect, so that whenever we identify non-compliance, consequences will follow that particular action. And eight, lastly, Chair, is the audit turnaround. That historical matters that the Auditor General had raised with us, until we deal with them, we will not be able to get the department out of qualification. So we have agreed that we've put in place an audit turnaround plan, which the Chief Internal Audit Executive has to help us implement to make sure that we get out of qualification. Now, if I was a football coach, taking an analogy of football, I was going to say what we plan to do this year is not to win the league, but to move out of relegation into top eight with the hope that we'll win the top eight competition. So we have said that by next year, the department has to be unqualified. And in the medium term, which is in 36 months, we aim to have the department receive a clean audit. So this is the vision we have impressed on all the colleagues in senior management. But together with DDG Skosana, who is currently responsible for operations of our region, we are moving around the country in the cold phase of service delivery to meet with the officials of the department to understand really where they are, what the department from head office should be doing to assist them with capacity, to clarify the vision and assist them in terms of making sure that we improve the services that we provide to the people of this country. So we hope that by the time we're done with the last province, which will be in the first 6 months of this current year, we'll have a clear picture, but we'll also have assisted all the officials of the department to appreciate what the department is going through in terms of trying to turn around. We're getting services of experts to come in and assist us with change management, because we don't necessarily have the skills ourselves, but we said we'll get expertise from other state entities and even from the private sector to come and assist us, so that by the end of this performance cycle, we must be presenting a report that can clearly account for how we have expended on the resources that have been entrusted to us. With this few words, Honorable Chair, I would like to yield to the Deputy Minister.
Sorry, just trying to get the iPad was charging. Thanks very much, DG, and thanks very much, Chairperson and members of the committee. This is largely the department's exercise, in that when the DG came in, a lot of work was put into the strategic plan and the annual performance plan. So it's more their document, and I'm glad that the officials have been engaging with the committee on this. As the DG has said, we haven't had a DG for some time. The acting DGs had done their best, but it's more difficult when you're acting. So we're really hopeful that he will bring substantial changes to the department. Maybe just a couple of issues, though. There's the issue of the court optimization plan or committee, which we set up. It's in the strategic plan or the annual performance plan to try and address the backlogs in the magistrates' courts, the district courts and the regional courts. From the statistics we have, and we can come and do a specific presentation if need be, the court optimization committee is sort of involving all the stakeholders, the magistrates, the chief magistrates, the regional court presidents, the court services officials from Department of Justice, MPA, Advocate de Kock that sits there, correctional services, SAPS, etc. We had a bit of a teething problem with, I think, some of the senior officials of the department not seeing this as a priority, but I think that's been addressed. We're currently having a problem with the regional court presidents not wanting to attend because they feel it impinges on their independence. The chief magistrates don't have those problems. I have challenged the regional court presidents as to give us examples of when they've been told what to do. As they claim, they haven't come back to me. I've referred the matter to the chairperson of the magistrates commission, Judge Ledwaba. So I'm hopeful he will address those problems, but that's sort of one element. That issue throws up interesting issues on the issue of an independent court administration. And as I think Advocate Skosana had spoken, it's an area that is still work in progress, and it's something I think that even the portfolio committee needs to be engaged in. If the judiciary administer the courts, then who do they account to when things go wrong? They can't, as judiciary, account, I think, to Parliament, because there's a separation of wealth. They definitely can't on judicial functions. Would there be confusion if they've got to start accounting on court administrative functions? I mean, currently we're implementing the Superior Courts Act, which sets out the judicial functions, exclusive judicial functions, and court administration in terms of that act at the Superior Courts level is basically shared. So I think, to Honourable Swart, I think it's something that we all need to be engaged on more. How is this going to work in practice? Particularly when it comes to accountability. And then there's other issues of if the judiciary is appointing staff members, who's going to deal with the disputes, the labour disputes. I mean, currently in the Superior Courts Act, it's the minister appoints with the concurrence of the head of court. So the minister gets taken to court. But if it's judiciary appointing staff, which court is going to adjudicate on those disputes? The Constitution does anyway refer to a member of cabinet responsible for the administration of justice. So that would probably, those are all issues I think we need to debate more. I just want to raise that DG had said yes, the department had not performed as it should have on the LGBTI issues. And as he said, there was a meeting with the minister, myself, and himself, and civil society organizations in that sector. It's something I'm extremely unhappy with the department, and the department and the DG know this, with the issue of the structures, the national task team and the rapid response team not functioning properly. But hopefully those issues will be addressed. And then just on the issue of I think Advocate Skosana had mentioned it, the issue of the sign language interpretation, of sign language as an official language, that has gone a bit slower than we had hoped. But the legislation for the inclusion, as the president had announced, of sign language as an official language would be going to cabinet shortly. In terms of the constitutional amendment, so there's a specific procedure that has to be followed of the bill being published first, sent to provincial legislatures, etc. So look, in short though, I think that we've got a new Director General. He's bringing stability and accountability to the position. And let's hope that and definitely from the executive, we will be looking at supporting him, but also monitoring the work of the department to ensure that it's better functioning and better addresses the issue of bringing access to justice to the people of South Africa. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Thank you to the DG and the team. We are looking forward to be engaging you when you come back for the quarterly reports. Because I think from what you are saying, there is a lot of work that has been done and a lot that is on the pipeline. And we think that if everything you say can be implemented, we will be in a position to see a new and a better Department of Justice. One of the issues that you might think of looking at is this issue of the infrastructure. Because when you engage with the judiciary, there are things that are more of an irritation, the leaking roofs, and those things that can be dealt with easily by artisans. I know the process of engaging with the Department of Infrastructure and Public Works is a complicated one. But I do think that you must also think about issues of shared services. At some point, Advocate Skosana did a report on an innovative program that they used in one of the high courts in Middleburg, where they even used some of the inmates to do some work in that court. Because I think the situation that we are in now with economy performing very badly, revenue being very, in fact, we are not, we don't have money as a state. What is needed is more innovation from managers and from politicians as to how do we ensure that we get more, we achieve more with less. And you have the Department of Correctional Services, for instance, they said that to deal with infrastructure issues they have on their part, appointed engineers and quantity surveyors. So one of the issues that you should be looking at, why can't that be a shared service with yourself and the Department of Correctional Services? You have artisans from the SOCs, especially from Transnet, Eskom, and DINEL, and a lot of them, over 4,000 of them, that can be used to deal with issues relating to plumbing, electricity in courts, so that we can be able to deal with issues that are not major infrastructure, but that are more of an irritation, but also that can bring a quick interventions to some of the irritating problems that are the lack of water, lack of electricity, and all of those issues. So I would recommend to you, Titi, that maybe you can also meet with the National Commissioner, you can also meet with the DG, Public Enterprises, to look at what type of immediate relief through those innovative programs you can bring to the lower judiciary, especially to the magistrate courts. Even to some of the courts, for instance, I think there are problems in Mpumalanga and Bombela High Court. And some of them, I'm told that they are relating to plumbing services. The artisans that are being trained by ESCOM and DINEL are the best in the country. And no FET produces better artisans than those artisans. But most of them, they have been trained by the state, paid for by the state. The state must use their services to try and alleviate the challenges that we are faced with currently. But I do think that from what we have heard, the plans that you have as the department, you will be able to test them when you come back for quarterly reports and even for BRRR. The taste will be in the pudding then. We will not comment with regard to your engagement with public service, with the chairperson of public service and administration. We will not comment because it's now a resolution of the House, but we will engage with it when you come back for BRRR reports. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Thank you for availing yourself, and thank you to the department and members. I think let's have a stretch break until 2 o'clock, because it's already 5:30, so that we can start with the NPA.
Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chairperson.